Guide to Aging, Medicines, and Alcohol. Call 1-800-662-HELP. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the station.
News Talk 620 WWNR. Keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Average low, well, we're going to be well below that at 38 by early tomorrow. Mainly clear sky into this evening and overnight. As we look at Thursday afternoon, a mix of clouds and sunshine in the morning will give way to increasing clouds as the system approaches. Slight chance for a late day shower. High 59. Look for a 30% risk of rain Thursday night. Friday, same story, 62. Then back to partial sun on Saturday.
WWNR Beckley. The opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of News Talk 620 WWNR.
Tonight, Head On with Bob Jenkins. Head On is brought to you every night by the 20,000 members of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, we're working for you. Now, Bob Jenkins.
Almost 7 minutes after 7 o'clock here in beautiful uptown Beckley. A lovely afternoon, a little bit on the brisk side, and gonna get downright cold tonight. Don't leave the brass monkeys unattended. This is Head On. It's Wednesday evening. It is, of course, the prayer meeting edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And, let's pick up where we left off last night. We had a rousing good conversation with regard to the nursing situation out at Beckley ARH Hospital and the complaints, valid, in my opinion, of the nurses out there. And I was glad to, I was certainly glad to hear from them, because this show is and always will be an open forum, especially for working people, in light of the fact that, frankly, there is no other such forum in this state and virtually in this nation. So that being the case, if I can add my one lone voice to the uplifted voices of workers, I consider myself to be in the best company in the world. Our friend Lawrence Messina had a follow-up article in the paper today from the Associated Press, and he pointed it points to the fact that there are a number of investigations apparently underway through the West Virginia Department of Labor and Jim Lewis, addressing, well, among other things, the fact that there was a statute enacted last year, signed into law, that speaks to compulsory overtime on the part of nurses throughout this state. One of the problems, not the least of which, is the fact that they are often compelled to work off the clock, or in many instances compelled to work at a lower rate of pay and in a so-called on-call basis. So it will be interesting to see how that investigation develops. Now, in the course of that entire discussion, I was provided by an individual with the language from the reprimand letter to which these concerned nurses were subjected, and I took it apart, piece by piece, word by word, and showed it to be less than straightforward, shall we say. But in the course of so doing, an individual within, I think it's safe to say, an individual within the management out there at the hospital took issue with my comments, took issue with the fact that I think the things that were most objected to were my usage of the phrase "bite me" and my description of comments by hospital management as weasel words. Now, for those of you who are familiar with this program, and many of you are, I don't hesitate to call when I see it. And I simply, I used a phrase I've used a million times, weasel words. I've referred to weasel words as being used by Republican politicians. I've referred to weasel words being used by Democratic politicians time and time again. And I used that phrase again last night. And it apparently got profoundly under someone's skin. And as did the phrase, bite me. Let me make something abundantly clear at this point. I do not wish to be bitten. I'm not that kind of guy. As such, to the extent that this person was offended either by word of mouth or rumor or by actual hearing, let me hereby at this time, because I am quite frankly the most straightforward, upright, and head-on kind of guy on the radio here or practically anywhere else for that matter, let me tender an apology to that individual. Let me personally apologize at this juncture to Mr. Rocco Massey. I don't know if he heard the show or if someone called him. I don't know the circumstances nor the particulars. But, sir, I took issue with your conduct, not with your person. And I reserve the right to take issue with conduct. That is the nature of what we do here. But to the extent that you felt you were somehow personally maligned, I would suggest that you were not indeed. But to the extent that you believe you were, you have my sincere and abiding apology. Because I'm that big a guy. I can do that. Now the issue remains, what about the nurses? But for purposes of discussion, I can tender an apology. Now, you will never hear some right-wing ideologue on the radio do that. You will not hear right-wingers come on and say, hey, I made a mistake, as I did the other day with regard to the runaway. See, they did it. They do this. What's her name? Jennifer Wilbanks. I made a mistake. I said I expected her to be found dead. She was not. And I announced that I had been mistaken. And in that instance, gladly so. More than anything else, this show, and I would submit to you more than any other show, is steeped in abiding integrity. It is what it's the very core and basis of this show. And where, to the exclusion of all other things, I will guard and protect and zealously defend the integrity of Head On with Bob Kincaid. And in order to maintain that integrity, because there is someone out there who feels he was personally maligned, that integrity demands that I do tender to him my regrets, that he feels that way. Fair enough? I hope so. Now, does that negate the fact that there is a nursing crisis in this area? Nope. Does it negate the fact that that I was proud as punch to see other workers standing up with these nurses today? I received photographs in my email, and it just made my heart swell with pride. Pride to see workers standing with workers. Because, and I suppose I should say it every night, as soon as we figure out, as soon as the painters figure out, as soon as the nurses figure out, as soon as the masons figure out, as soon as the drywall finishers figure out, as soon as the retail clerk walking the floor at Sears figures out that there is no such thing as a drywall finisher or a brick mason or any other sort. Those things do not exist. There is only one thing. There are workers. And on that day when we all figure out that there are only workers and that everything else is an artificial delineation away from that idea, on the day we figure out that it's all a bunch of artificial hooey, this nation will change for the better and will change in ways that the very word justice cannot comprehend. When we are all Americans and we are all American workers, if you're paid by the minute, if you're paid by the hour, if somebody else hands you your pay at the end of the week or 2 weeks or whatever, you're a worker. And as soon as all the workers figure that out, America can be America again, as the poet said. I yearn for that day. We may yet live to see it. One would like to hope. The phone number, the basic details of the program, 252-6200 is the local number. Outside Beckley, 800-620, WWNR 9967. And email, of course, to bob@headonradio.com. You can also go to headonradio.com, join in the message boards there, and jump into the fracas. It costs you nothing but the time it takes you to enter into the debate. And that'll be good for you. We stream live for you every night on the Internet at WWNRNewsTalk620.com. Learn them, know them, use them. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You are. After age 65, you have over a 70% chance of needing some kind of long-term care. That's why you need long-term care insurance from State Farm Mutual Automobile Insurance Company. It can help you protect you from the cost of extended care. And who better to talk to about it than your local State Farm agent? For costs and complete coverage details, call agents Regina Eccles in Hinton, or Herb Garlitz in Beckley, or Jerry Gibbons in Somersville. Statistics cited in long-term care. Knowing the risk, paying the price. Health Insurance Association of America, 1997.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You know us. We're your neighborhood leader drugstore. Independently owned by people who care, we're able to give you fast, friendly service. And we're proud of our prices. Generic, Leader brand, or national, Leader prices are hard to beat.
You really can save. Leader TruTrack blood glucose monitoring system, only $19.99, and 50-count test strips, only $23.99. This month only at participating stores. Compare and save, and you'll see why Leader is the place to go.
Leader, it's your neighborhood. It's your drugstore.
And now, today's health report. Cold hearts. If you are given a wintry welcome at birth, you may be a candidate for future heart problems, say researchers at the University of Bristol in the UK. During a recent study of older women published in the journal Heart, archived weather data was analyzed to determine the outdoor temperature at the time and place of each participant's birth. Findings showed women born during colder weather had a 24% higher risk of heart disease as they aged. Lower temperatures were also linked to insulin problems, high triglyceride levels, and decreased lung function. The study's authors say it's possible exposure to the cold results in increased fat storage and insulin resistance, which can be contributing factors to coronary heart disease. But don't panic yet. Further studies are needed to verify the results. This has been today's health report to help you stay healthier longer, brought to you by Leader Drugstores. Find the location of the Leader Drugstore nearest you at myleader.com. Leader Drugstores, it's your neighborhood, it's your drugstore.
WWNR Beckley.
Back to radio for the rest of us. Head On.
It is radio for the rest of us. And I'm the radio guy for the rest of us. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. 20 minutes and a half past the hour. And just moving along, I got to share this one with you. This was another one of the stories sent to us by our good friend Gene. It comes from rawstory.com. And this is a transcript of a House Homeland Security Committee hearing on airline security from Wednesday, I believe April 27th. I've had this in the stack for a while, and I was absolutely determined to get to it today. This is one of those the tear at your hair and run screaming around the room things. Now, the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee is Christopher Cox. He is, of course, a Republican from California. And he called on this Georgia Republican named John Linder, Congressman John Linder. And like so many of these ultra-right-wing radicals, Republicans, this guy is apparently crazier than an outhouse rat. So here's the exchange. Chairman Cox. The gentleman from Georgia, Congressman Linder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We could probably spend the entire budget of the United States on the airline industry and still be missing some pieces.
Now pay attention. This is the good stuff. I mean, this is the stuff you can't pay to have somebody write. This is the stuff that, you know, if you had Laura Bush's comedy writer from last Saturday night, you couldn't get this stuff.
Now, most of us don't believe that we will ever see an airline hit a building because the passengers won't allow it.
Back up. I know. April 27th, 2005, in case you were wondering.
Now, most of us don't believe that we will ever see an airline hit a building because the passengers won't allow it. And if an airline is blown up in the air, that is a very bad circumstance for 200 or 300 people. But it is not a catastrophe. I would rather spend these fortunes looking for a catastrophe.
Mumbling and inaudible. Chairman Cox, is the gentleman's microphone turned on? And you know, at this point, Chris Cox from California is sitting there playing, please, God, don't let his microphone be turned on. Don't let his microphone be turned on. Please, God, don't let that ever be transcribed. Is the gentleman's microphone turned on? Representative Linder.
Yes. We could spend everything we have protecting airplanes and still not protect everything. It is my view that no airplane will ever hit a commercial building, which is the only value they have in taking out large numbers of people. It is my view that passengers won't allow that to happen, but it is entirely possible that an airplane will blow up in the air with some inaudible or warning today or some other technique, but that is a very bad circumstance for about 200, 300 people. But it is not a catastrophe.
Feel free to tear at your hair and run screaming around the room. Now, Republicans, just like this Congressman Linder, spent the entire election cycle prior to last November running around the country with their hair on fire, screaming, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. Every dark-skinned guy with a beard wants to blow up a building, worrying about the moose limbs. And we were told that if we didn't reelect George W. Bush, that Dick Cheney said it himself. Osama will just attack the snot out of us if we don't reelect George Bush. Now you've got Congressman Linder. My God, what godforsaken little corner of Georgia does this truly ignorant, bizarre little man represent? Now see, that's a personal attack, just in case you were wondering. Referring to this guy as an ignorant, bizarre little man. I don't know. You could argue that's not even a personal attack. Those are adjectives. They are described. What do you call a guy who says it's a very bad circumstance for about 200, 300 people who get blown up in an airplane, but it is not a catastrophe?
My God, that's Stalinist. That's, what did he say? You know, 20 dead people is a tragedy, 20 million dead people is a statistic. I don't know, I'm paraphrasing. Oh. Most of us don't believe that we will ever see an airline hit a building. Really? Really, Congressman Linder, you don't believe you'll ever see an airline hit a building? Or did he mean, maybe the transcriptionist was having trouble with his thick cracker accent. Elana, not airline. Most of us don't believe we will ever see an airline hit a building because the passengers won't allow it. Really? And so, I mean, is this guy on the conspiracy theory now that, is this Capricorn 1? Did 9/11 not really happen and the buildings are actually there? But I don't know. This is what you get with this, these crazier than outhouse rat Republicans. It is my view that no airplane will ever hit a commercial building. Ever. He doesn't say it's unlikely. It's ever. Ever. And that, when you say ever, there's a difference between ever in the future and ever, ever. Ever at all. This guy, you know, I remember when I started doing this stuff and the occasional freakish little Kool-Aid drinking right winger would get all bent out of shape and would have to call in and get beaten about the head and shoulders in a debate standpoint, would call in and say, Bob Kincaid, have you forgot about 9/11 when they flied their planes into our buildings? No, I hadn't. I just didn't believe that attacking the people who had nothing to do with it was the appropriate response. So maybe, and you know, they're out there. It's like, you know, cockroaches when the lights are off. They're just scurrying around. You right-wingers who hang on my every word, could you do me a favor and crank up some of that righteous indignation for your brother-in-arms, Congressman John Linder, the Republican from Georgia? Could you drop him a note and ask him if he has forgotten about 9/11? And would you ask him maybe to explain at a little bit better length just what in the sweet name of all that's holy he meant by suggesting that when planes fly into buildings or when planes crash or planes blow up, that it's a very bad circumstance for about 200, 300 people, but it is not a catastrophe. It's not a catastrophe. Reckon I don't even know how to pronounce catastrophe. Dumb cracker. Now, see, that's a personal attack. That's definitely a personal attack. Dumb cracker is definitely a personal attack. And you know what? This sucker earned it. He earned it. We get personal attacks the old-fashioned way. We earn them. This sucker earned it. 9/11 was not a catastrophe. Really? Really? Do tell. In that case, oh, what constitutes a catastrophe, if you don't mind my being so forward as to ask? You think I'm kidding? Go to Raw Story. You can see the quotes. They by now they may even have an audio clip up. Bad circumstance for 200 to 300 people, but it is not a catastrophe. I wonder if anybody's told the families of the 9/11 victims about this yet. You would like to hope that they have. It is time for our bottom of the hour break. Man, it's been flying by again. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Peter Strauss with today's Garden Minutes from Miracle-Gro, makers of Miracle-Gro Shake and Feed, the continuous release plant food that feeds for 3 months. Miracle-Gro Shake and Feed. Shake a little, grow a lot.
Daisies, pansies, columbines, peonies, roses, mums. Nothing brings a yard to life like flowers. And having the flower garden of your dreams is easier than you may think. One of the first decisions you need to make is what kind of flower garden you want. Do you want a formal garden? These are symmetrical. In other words, what's on the left side is also on the right side, with a focal point, a statue, a trellis, a pond, in the middle. Informal gardens are more freeform and flow around trees, decks, and buildings. Flower borders are just that. They border a building, fence, or sidewalk. Then there are island beds. These are visible from all sides and are surrounded by open area on all sides, so they look like, well, islands. Okay, now you've got to figure out what kind of light your garden will receive. Full sun, part shade, or full shade. That'll be critical in your selection of flowers. Next, the color scheme. Full sun gardens can handle brightly colored flowers, reds, bright yellows, rich blues. But shaded areas can appear brighter using light colored plants. Here's where the light yellows, whites, lavenders, and pale blues really work. By following just a few design rules, your outdoor plantings can be just as dramatic as your indoor decor. If you're looking for great results in your garden without a lot of work, try Miracle-Gro Shake and Feed. It shakes on dry in just a few minutes and then feeds your plants continuously for 3 months. It's the quickest, easiest way to get Miracle-Gro results. I'm Peter Strauss for Miracle-Gro.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Rebecca Jameson.
It's looking more like thousands of union workers at United Airlines will strike over the airline moving to wipe out their pensions. A bankruptcy court hearing is coming up in a few days where the airline is expected to make its play to end the defined benefit pensions. The Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association and the International Association of Machinists are both poised to strike if necessary, with their members increasingly angry and frustrated over United Management's position as the airline tries to solve its financial troubles. The IAM says United CEO Glenn Tilton has declared that there are no sacred cows and everything is on the table. But the union says Tilton, who just collected a $366,000 bonus, has a $4.5 million personal pension, and that is off the table and won't be cut. The flight attendants union at United is also ready to strike. If United ends these pensions and turns them over to the Federal Benefit Guarantee Corporation, workers who put in decades at United will see drastically reduced pensions. It would be one of the biggest pension defaults in U.S. history.
A hostile immigration bill is likely to pass the Senate next week, tacked onto an appropriations bill that would fund the war in Iraq and aid tsunami victims. The Real ID Act would make it harder for immigrants to obtain driver's licenses. The measure also goes against international law by asking asylum seekers for written corroboration in order to be granted safe haven in the U.S. and would give the Department of Homeland Security unconditional authority to build barriers along U.S. borders.
Undocumented people here are not the problem. They're a symptom of a problem, an immigration system that doesn't work.
Judith Golub is the senior director of advocacy and public affairs for the American Immigration Lawyers Association. She says the U.S. needs immigration reform, but that immigrants need more rights, not less, and the Real ID Act is only going to make things worse.
I can't tell you how many times I get a call from someone who says, this is the best worker I have, this is a great neighbor I know, I'd like to help them become legal. How can I do that? My answer is, there's no way you can do it in the current system law.
The Protecting America's Workers Act of 2005 would make corporate manslaughter a felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison. Sponsored by Senators Edward Kennedy and John Corzine and Congressman Major Owens, it would also toughen penalties for lying to the federal agency charged with protecting workplace health and safety. Here's today's Dow Bob report. The U.S. Census Bureau says the median household income in the U.S. is $43,000. The median home price in the U.S., meanwhile, is $187,000. The average family health insurance premium is now over $9,000 a year. JobWatch says the real wages of 80% of the U.S. workforce are down slightly from 1 year ago. The cost of housing is rising faster than wages in the U.S., and the cost of health care is outstripping them both.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
WWNR Beckley.
Radio for the real majority. Head on.
Oh, let's see. Yeah. I'm not going to tell you what time it is. I got to break myself of that. That's just dumb. What it is time to go to the phones. 252-6200. Outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. Jose has been waiting patiently. Thank you, Jose. You're head on.
Hey.
Bob, yeah.
It's later than you think.
Is it really?
I believe it's the tribulation before the calm.
Could be. Could
Man,
be.
Man, I don't know if I can make it 10 more days.
Oh, well, hold it. Make it one, and it'll be down to 9.
All right. It's good endurance, ain't it?
It is indeed, and that's all we can do. Persevere.
Yes.
Press on.
It's coming apart at the seams.
You know, it is in many ways.
Not only there in southern regional, but I've got my mind on that box.
Yeah, little different. Little different.
Then the regional hospital and back down to PAX, close to where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
Lady collects money, and she's been collided twice in the booth that she's in. And her employer, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's an employee.
Yeah, she's a worker.
And she's been crying, and Wesley's been giving her a hard way to go. Says, go out there in that booth and take the pill.
Yeah.
And she's had trauma from, you know, being collided in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then trying to take all that money from people going north and south.
Right.
If you call on Yahweh.
Yeah, and that's sometimes that's all you can do, Jose.
Yeah. Well, you enjoy the day and keep coping, Bob.
I'm trying as hard as I can.
You're doing good. You made me cry.
I did.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to.
Well, I know you didn't, but empathy, you know, goes a long ways.
That's true.
So hang in there.
I'm going to try. Thanks, Jose.
I'll see you.
Take care now. And let's see, Jeff. Hey, Jeff, you're head on.
What's up now, Bob?
You are.
I like old Jose's calls, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I like him a lot.
Well, Jose, I think that's just a lot of people still just do not either don't want to understand or cannot understand or refuse to understand exactly all the options that are being laid out there with the Social Security reform plan.
Well, I don't know that we know yet what options have been laid out, Jeff. I mean, it changes from day to day.
Well, not exactly.
I mean, first
there's people cherry picking bits and pieces from each. We're having hearings up there. There's one man from one of the big policy institute buildings, one of the big giant building in D.C. One man named Peter Ferrara. You know, are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I am.
Big, kind of looks like a younger Thomas Jefferson sitting there, doesn't he?
I don't know that I'd necessarily grace him that way.
Well, he's doing his job, Bob. But you know, we have four different plans out there. And two of these plans, if you invest your money, if you choose to, you do not have to, if you choose to invest your money in the stock market, if the market tanks, you're still guaranteed to get your money back. You cannot lose. You know that, right? Two of the plans.
I don't believe that.
Well, two of the plans, it's there. It's in writing.
I know. We're talking about believing. I'm using that dirty word that I hate so much.
But there's four plans there. Two of them have it. It's not. You don't have a choice of whether you believe it or not. It's there. It's wrote down on a piece of paper, and if the president signs it, it turns into law. Two of the plans,
you're telling me that Wall Street is just charitably going to agree to eat any losses?
Nope. The government will have to make it up.
Ah. And who's the government?
We are. But it's our money anyway.
So why risk losing it in the first place?
You're not risking losing it.
Well, no, you just said if the market completely goes in the tank and you lose everything, then we make it up anyway.
But you still get, it's your money anyway. You was going to get it back. But the market has performed last 50 years. It's returning around 4.8%. That's an average.
I understand that. There's a great book out there. Called The Wealthy Barber,
mm-hmm.
And I would recommend it to you.
I've heard of it, but I'll read it. Is it in bookstores?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Or, I mean, you could probably go to Walden Books or B. Dalton's or whatever.
I've got a couple books.
Bookland is my particular favorite.
Mm-hmm. I like to look at the cheap markdown books. I hate to buy a book as soon as it comes out because you pay
for it. Well, no, this thing's been out for 10, 15 years, but it's just a genius piece of writing for anybody who wants to invest.
What was it called now?
The Wealthy Barber.
Wealthy Barber.
Yeah.
Okay. But, and with two, a lot of people will say, well, what if the market tanks right as I'm getting ready to retire? Well, how they're the proposal, the plan to do that is as you reach retirement age, they will move your money into safer and safer things to where you're not as risky anymore. That's one way that they would work to not let you kapow right near the end.
Jeff, explain something to me, would you please?
Mm-hmm.
Why does Wall Street need Social Security's money?
Wall Street doesn't need it.
So
Wall Street
will take it or leave it.
We need what? Look, Bob.
I mean, in the 80s, we saw Republican economic theory use people's pension money to boost Wall Street. It happened. Okay. Now, why does it have to happen again?
There is hundreds and hundreds of billions, if not trillions, of dollars traded on Wall Street every day. If there wasn't people making money, it wouldn't be happening. And it's not just the brokers. If the people that were investing the money and owned the stocks weren't making something, they wouldn't be doing it.
I understand that. And they're doing it with the money. Read any prospectus, Jeff. Read any prospectus, and it will tell you, do not invest your money in this fund. Now they've just spent 49 pages telling you that this fund is the best. You're working like a mutual fund. This is the best fund to come down the road since Adam learned how to slice apples.
Mm-hmm.
And on page 50, they'll tell you, in very small print, don't invest in this fund if you can't afford to lose this money.
Well, plus, you can go in savings bonds and things that are no risk. You're going to guarantee Dr. Bill was talking like savings is just 1% right now. That's not what it is.
On a plain old passbook savings account, you're lucky if you're getting 1.5.
That's about 1.5, but I bought a CD Friday and I got 4.3% on it.
And you know what you're doing with that 4.3%?
You're
keeping up with inflation. You're not making anything.
That's, Social Security money isn't even keeping up with inflation. Social Security's only doing about 1%. That's like passbook savings.
And Social Security is not designed as a money-making scheme, Jeff. I think maybe that's one of the fundamental problems with this debate is that people want to see Social Security as an investment opportunity. It's not. It's an insurance policy.
Well, how come, a lot of state employees and the government employees, they have a different type of program.
But they pay into Social Security and they have that program. Just like you can have a CD or you can have a Roth IRA or another kind of IRA, or where you work, you can invest in your 401k. Those are in addition to.
Those would be the add-on accounts. The thing about the add-on accounts is that that doesn't help the low-income earners any because they don't have enough money to put into add-on accounts to amount to much.
Well, with a Roth IRA, you can put in $2,000 a year. If you're married, you can put in $4,000.
But a lot of people with two kids and not making a lot of money can't afford that.
Right.
So they don't have.
You're making my case, Jeff. You're making my case. Why do you want to piratize Social Security into a thing that's going to mean less money? It could possibly mean less money for them.
It can't be less money for them.
Again, Jeff, I think, and this is because I'm a wild-eyed, fire-breathing liberal. We're screwing up the debate to begin with. I want to know why in the greatest nation on planet Earth, I want to know why we're not talking about having an age 60 retirement and, doubling benefits.
Because all the people in the United States live beyond their means. We buy too many new cars. We invest our money in houses, and we take too many vacations and buy too many TVs instead of investing for our later years, and it's going to catch up with us.
I'm going to pay you a little compliment, Jeff. I'm going to ask you, you know, when you get a chance to do some research, I want you to look up Cato, C-A-T-O.
Yeah.
He was a contemporary of Julius Caesar. You're reminding me of Cato right now.
Well, I do believe, you know, think about this. Imagine a person, most people will buy two new cars before they're the age 35. They're going to spend about $20,000 on each one. They took that $40,000 and put it in a Roth IRA or a 401k or even CDs. By the time they're 65, and drive a $2,000-$4,000 vehicle. By the time they're 65, that $40,000 is going to be worth near $100,000.
No, I know.
And them two vehicles are going to be a rusting hulk in a melting pot somewhere.
I couldn't agree with you more,
Jeff. Do we want to appreciate our money or depreciate our money? And in America, most of the time, we make the wrong choice. People buy a new vehicle is the worst investment you can make.
Look, you go to a new, I'm going to get myself in trouble again. It is a known fact that when you sign the papers for that new vehicle, you've just signed your little name, they hand you the keys, you put the key in the ignition, the value of your vehicle just went down 10%.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, And what's more important, riding around in a new car now or having security and money and being able to take care of yourself when you're 65?
Jeff, it depends on whether you're a grasshopper or an ant.
Let me ask you this, have you ever heard of the Glass-Steagall Act?
No.
You never have?
The Glass who what?
Glass-Steagall.
Steagall?
S-T-E-A-G-A-L-L. Something close to that.
Glass-Steagall
Act. That was an act started in 1933 or 34, and it kept banks from being investment institutions and investment institutions from being banks.
Okay, yeah, I know. Okay, I know what you're talking about. I didn't know it by name. And that got the...
Appealed under Clinton.
Yeah, I got, longer than Clinton.
Sometime through there. And some of the readings that I've read about that claims that that repeal of that act, you know how early on Dr. Bill, people were talking about how banks are acting as investment institutions.
Right.
Some of the readings that I've done on the repeal of that act says that doing that directly led to the WorldCom debacle and some of the other bankruptcies we're having now too.
I don't know about making that much of a connection. I know it was upsetting to me when it went down. I didn't think, because you know, now you go in to pay your car insurance and it says bank with us.
Yeah,
I'm going to bank with an insurance company. Yeah, I can still sue the bank. You know what I mean? I got a story in my stack here. It's going to make you, it'll make you scream. Walmart's looking to get into the banking business. Are you ready for that one? Low interest rates every day.
I've got a good bank. I won't use a bank that charges for a checking account.
No, no.
If it's not free, I don't want to talk to you.
I can understand
that. Give me free checks, too.
You're a cheap little son of a gun, you know.
Well,
that, Jeff?
I mean, it's a capitalist world.
That's right, and you're being a good capitalist.
Thank you. But read up on that Glass-Steagall Act. You might be surprised some of the stuff you'll find out about.
Well, and I think wasn't that historically speaking, wasn't that a response to the excesses of Wall Street and the money industry and purchasing on margin and things like that that led up to the crash of the stock market?
Right. That was to prevent another
meltdown.
Yeah. And we in the 90s, we said, don't need this no more. Threw that away.
But if we could reframe the debate, Jeff, I'd be interested to know. If we could reframe the debate and make Social Security work in such a way that you could pay into it and retire at 60 on full benefits, that were actually enough to keep you alive and happy for as long as you shuffled along on this mortal coil, wouldn't that be something you could get behind?
Yeah, but they would have to probably it'd probably have to go to 10% and 10% match from your employer.
What if we just said everybody pays? All Americans pay, not just the people who make $90,000 below.
The only thing I understand about raising that 90,000 cap, but I just can't hardly get behind a plan that that's going to tax somebody making $150,000 and then only hand them $2,500 a month when they retire.
But they're getting it anyway.
Getting what anyway?
They're going to get the check one way or the, as it now stands, they get the check one way or the other.
But they're paying so much more. You know, if they're making $150 and you're going to take 6.2 of everything over 90, you're talking about another $4,000 a year that you're taking from that person.
Well, I tell you what, if we're not going to raise the ceiling, I think we ought, the one thing that I kind of scratched my head a little bit when I heard Boy George talking about it, Jeff, was this idea of taking people like his daddy out of the system.
Yeah.
But that made me feel like they were playing a little fast and loose, maybe being a little shifty. Because if you create a program that the rich don't participate in, then the next thing you know, it's a welfare program, and you've got some Republican idiot on the floor of the Congress talking about Social Security queens driving around in brand new Cadillacs.
Well, I just can't. I can't fathom raising the cap above 90 without giving them nothing else for it.
Oh, but we give them stuff for it all the time. Virtually all of the resources of this country go into protecting the money and protecting the wealth and protecting the property. They have most of the wealth, so therefore most of the resources that go to protect it go to protect them.
Well, in West Virginia, you know, 90 just sounds like an astronomical number. But in places like California and New York and Connecticut, where all the insurance, like in Hartford and places like that,
yeah.
I think Connecticut's number one, or Alaska one is number one median income in the country. 90 grand ain't a whole lot.
Oh,
so you're talking in California, $250,000 is the average house.
Oh, I know.
You know, and 90,000, you know, that's just a guy. You know,
you work in
working at McDonald's in the day and washing cars in the evening.
You work in New York City and you make 90 grand. You don't get to live in New York City.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
See, you're
I do understand.
It's a tough thing. That's why it's not an easy thing. It's a tough thing. And I'm sounding like a rat mail.
That's okay.
I like old rat mail too.
I've got the best callers in talk radio. There's no doubt about it.
I don't know.
Well, Jeff, I mean, you are an avowed Republican. I gotta change gears on you here just real quick.
All right.
Did you hear what about this Congressman John Linder and his comments from April 27th?
About forgetting about the airplane?
Yeah.
I didn't hear about it till you said it.
Well, help me here because I can't.
I don't know what he's thinking if he really forgot.
When 200 or 300 people die in a plane crash, it's not a catastrophe.
I don't know. Yeah. People drop things all the time, you know. Okay. Well, he's not my congressman.
No, he's not. Thank God. because if he was yours, he'd be mine, and I'd just be standing out on the veranda screaming.
You know, and another thing that people just don't realize some things you can tell people 20 times in a row, and they still just can't seem to get it. The bankruptcy thing, you know, somebody was talking today about the Polaroid people being cut off,
yeah,
and then they lose their jobs, and then we've taken away their right to file the chapter, I think it's chapter 9, that lets them get away with all the debt.
Yeah, pick one. I'm not sure.
It's one of the three, but we haven't really done that. If they have no income, they're still below them. If you're below the median income for your state with the amount of people in your household, you are not affected by these new. The only thing this new rule does, it says, say I live in this little house by myself and I'm making $2,000 a month, and my house payment's $400 a month, and I've got a $300 a month car payment. You're going to go before the debt counselor. You're going to show him your house payment. You're going to show him your car payment.
And you're going to have to pay the debt counselor now.
Well, that's just a one-time thing.
You didn't have to do that before.
But listen to me. They're going to say, you know, $400 for your house, $300 for your car, $500 for your utilities, and a couple hundred for food. So you have, they're going to, after you pay for everything, you're going to have like $400 or $500 left over. They're going to say, okay, out of that $500, you are going to pay for this stuff that you bought, that you promised you would pay for, that you didn't pay for. You know, when when you put something on a credit card, you are promising you'll pay for that.
Yeah, and the credit card company begged you to take that credit card.
Well,
they knew going in, Jeff, that they were an unsecured creditor, and what this bill has done is turned them into a secured creditor just like your mortgage lender on your house or your car.
But now
that's wrong. Now one other thing though, we got to hit it pretty quick, but you mentioned the Polaroid and of course there's the Horizon Energy bankruptcy. Congress worked like little North Pole elves to craft this, what I believe is a hateful bankruptcy bill. And yet, out of all that time they spent on that, they didn't have time to rectify retirees and pensioners getting ripped off by CEOs who walk away with $20 million golden handshakes.
CEOs need to be reined in. Even Rush Limbaugh said that the other day.
Well, it's easy to say it, but apparently, when you do say it, they're deaf in D.C. We got to roll, Jeff.
All
thanks.
Right, thanks, man.
Later. Ask yourself that question. They spent all that time. The Senate spent all that time. The Republicans spent all that time shooting down amendments that would, for instance, exempt Iraq War veterans coming home minus limbs from this hateful bankruptcy bill. Trying to exempt people who are victims of identity fraud from this hateful bankruptcy bill. The Republicans busted their humps, shooting down all of those amendments, and at no point in time did any one of them stand up and say, hey, what about these corporate pirates who are literally stealing the pensions from people who traded their very days, hours, and lives in exchange for a promise of that pension? What about them? Well, the Republican Party didn't have time for them because, of course, you know, those aren't the people who pay the Republican Congress. Sometimes it sort of sucks to just look reality squarely in the eye. But sometimes you have to look anyway, don't you? Time for our top of the hour news. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The American Foundation for Urologic Disease urges all men to learn more about prostate enlargement. More than half of men over age 60 have benign prostatic hyperplasia, BPH. At present, it cannot be prevented. It is not cancer, nor will it lead to cancer. Many men have no significant symptoms. But sometimes BPH can interfere with urine flow, causing a delay in the start, or causing it to start and stop, or causing frequent urination. BPH treatment ranges from watchful waiting if there are no symptoms or the symptoms are not severe, to medicines or surgery to relieve the condition. If you have bothersome symptoms of an enlarged prostate, don't be embarrassed to speak with your doctor. BPH does not have to take a huge toll on your quality of life. If you have blood in your urine or burning or pain when urinating, see your doctor immediately. A message from the American Foundation for Urologic Disease. For more information, go to www.afud.org.
Thank you for listening to the station that puts you one-on-one with the people and the issues that matter most to you. News Talk 620, WWNR.
Beckley. Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history. You can depend on us. News Talk 620, WWNR. Beckley. It's 8 o'clock.
If you're an older adult, be medicine smart. For the free brochure, As You Age, Guide to Aging, Medicines, and Alcohol, call 1-800-662-HELP. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the station.
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Average low, well, we're going to be well below that at 38 by early tomorrow. Mainly clear sky into this evening and overnight. As we look at Thursday afternoon, a mix of clouds and sunshine in the morning will give way to increasing clouds as the system approaches. Slight chance for a late-day shower, high 59. Look for a 30% risk of rain Thursday night. Friday, same story, 62. Then back to partial sun on Saturday.
WWNR Beckley.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes after 8 o'clock, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, your nightly confrontation with the facts. Just the facts, ma'am. Great to have you along. Of course, your thoughts are welcome at 252-6200, outside Beckley at 800-620-9967. We will gladly pay the freight. Email to bob@headonradio.com. Or WWNR at netphase.net. Yeah, some days it works. You know, if you kind of stick your left arm out and hold your right leg up and stick your tongue out and hold your tongue, yeah, it works. So all that's there for you. Straight to the phones. Jim's been waiting. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
G'day.
G'day, Mike.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. You?
I'm all right. You know, I was right behind Jeff when he bought that CD.
Were you?
It was at Cheap Thrills.
Oh.
Oh, goodness. He opened himself up. He really opened himself wide open for that one.
Well, you know, and I can't, you know, that one's hanging up above the rim. I can't blame you for jumping up and getting our Shaquille O'Neal on it.
What now?
I said that one's just hanging up above the rim. You can't, you know, it's in the moment and in the situation. It's hard to avoid.
All right, listen, moving on because time is valuable. And I want to know, is it permissible to say the F-A-R-T word on radio?
I don't know. I think you just spelled, yeah, you can say fart.
Okay, I have a book written by Benjamin Franklin, and this is the Franklin that you never read in school, but it's a published book, and it was entitled Fart Proudly.
Really?
Really.
But it's still that Benjamin Franklin.
It is, the same Benjamin Franklin. And the preface, it says here, he that is conscious of a stink in his britches is jealous of every wrinkle in another's nose. Benjamin Franklin, Poor Richard's Almanac, 71. But the part that I want to reply to my Republican counterparts, I want to quote something, if I may.
Go ahead.
Quote, and when you are criticized, as you will be, remind your critics that you have a right to speak your mind. And if they shout you down, as they probably will, then inform them that since they insist on being asses, you will henceforth communicate with them with the appropriate part of your own anatomy, and turn to face them from the posterior, let them know where you stand. Let every fart count as a peal of thunder for liberty. Let every fart remind the nation of how much it is let pass out of its control. It is a small gesture, but one that can be very effective, especially in a large crowd. So fart, and if you must, fart often, but always fart without apology. Fart for freedom, fart for liberty, and most of all, fart proudly.
Well, amen. And those are, again, those are not your words.
These are Benjamin Franklin's words, and the book was published, it was compiled and edited by Carl Japinski, Athenia Press, Columbus, Ohio, 1990.
Well, I was watching a History Channel special about Franklin, and they specifically referenced the fact that, you know, everybody knows early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise, and a penny saved is a penny earned, yada, yada. But the narrator of the program went on to say, poor Richard had a lot of other advice that isn't nearly as wholesome as that.
Well, I mean, he also has a quote here that says, he that lives upon hope dies farting. But, you know, pursuant to this thing about these people, these CEOs and people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Bob, you know what their ratio income is? It's 301 to 1.
Yeah.
The average person makes, if he's lucky, takes home $556 a week, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The average CEO takes home $156,000 a week.
But there's nothing wrong with the system, and that's just good capitalism.
Right. And I'll tell you something else. worldwide, you have the wealthy who have offshored all $11.5 trillion of their wealth so that it doesn't have any tax burden.
Right.
And from that, they get $886 billion in stock returns a year. And the amount that they have offshored that is non-taxable is equivalent to the entire gross domestic product of Great Britain.
Yeah, I read that somewhere, and
that's a lot of wealth that's not properly distributed.
Well, that's a lot of wealth that's doing nobody any good. And if you go back and you read The Wealth of Nations,
right,
which our Republican counterparts so proudly point to, if you actually read it, you will find that the system that Adam Smith describes bears almost no resemblance whatsoever to the oligarchy or the kleptocracy or the greedigarchy, you know, whatever word you want to apply to it, that we have to live with today.
Really, it's avarice, greed. And, you know, these people, I mean, I don't know what they can do with it. They can't be buried with it. I guess they could be entombed with it. I don't know.
When I see these CEOs and, oh, you know, our buddy Don Blankenstein cashed in some chips the other day for a cool $5.7 million, something like that. You know what flashes, you know, I'm a lover of film, Jim. I love movies. And I think about, you used the word avarice. I think of these avaricious son of a guns, and I remember that scene from the end of Marathon Man.
Oh, yeah.
Where Dustin Hoffman is holding the gun on Laurence Olivier, and he's got that briefcase full of diamonds, and he says, eat them. Eat them.
That's after Olivier has done a little dental work on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've found that when you look at a dentist and you say, is it safe? They don't like that joke.
No, they don't.
But, no, really, eat it. You know, eat your SUV.
Really?
Eat your mink.
Or as John Waters said, eat your makeup.
Yeah. Eat. Because what are the identified, who was it, Maslow? With the hierarchy of needs? Yeah, what are they? Food?
All the basics and basically it's a pyramid. And, you know, at the top is self-actualization.
Right.
With food and clothing and shelter being at the very bottom.
And as a consequence of that, how do you apply that to the kleptocracy? How do you apply that to a guy who spends his stockholders' money to buy a $10,000 shower curtain and a $15,000 umbrella stand?
Oh, I know why I'd apply to him if I could catch him doing it.
I know, but that
cattle prod.
Yeah, how do you square that?
You can't, Bob. It can't be squared. There's no way it can be squared. It's just absolute lunacy.
Why does it seem like we're the only ones talking about it, Jim? I don't mean you and me, but you know there is a lot that goes on in this radio show that this little teeny tiny itsy bitsy radio show that you won't hear anywhere else in America.
I don't know, buddy. Listen, like I told you before, Iskra, from the sparks will come the flame.
Well,
you just don't ever forget that.
I try not to.
And, you know, I'll tell you something. This thing about the Social Security proposition, this is nothing but in chess you call it a gambit on Bush's part.
Sure.
To get the nose of a camel under the tent.
Right, because the long-term goal, Jim, is the destruction of the system.
Exactly. And if he has to give a little to get a little, he's willing to play that game, and he's still got good old Tom DeLay up there to try to rope them up and ride them out, rawhide.
Yeah, but 60%.
Unless they put him behind in jail.
60% of America says Tom DeLay doesn't need to be there anymore. But, you know, what are we going to get behind that? Who's the freak from Missouri? I mean, he's right, and, you know, he's another Tom DeLay.
Well, I mean, it's just like when they were bragging about to kill that member of Al-Qaeda. Well, somebody in Al-Qaeda either got a promotion, and, you know, they slid right into place, and it was totally seamless.
Yeah, and again, that's another case of media manipulation, because this
exactly.
You know, number three Al-Qaeda lieutenant, blah, 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 blah. And you're thinking, wow, this guy, I mean, you know, is this the guy who, like, Western Union, the millions of dollars to Muhammad Atta to learn to fly the plane?
And those but if you go down if, independently, you yeah, know, well, like Gallus News said. And, you know, this business of this thing with the Social Security thing, this is, you know, if you believe all that stuff, hey, my name is Shady Sam, and I want to sell you a used car.
Yeah, exactly, because just as with that Al-Qaeda guy, if you read far enough into the story, you know what you found out? You know what his claim to fame was? Had nothing to do with 9/11. Had nothing to do with the Madrid train bombings, had nothing to do with the Balinese bombing, had nothing to do with the Casablanca bombings. His claim to fame was that he scared Pervez Musharraf into a bad case of the Fantods twice. That's
and that was it.
But he's an Al-Qaeda general.
And nothing much was said about the 50 Iraqis who were police recruits, and one comes in there, and the carnage was so bad they had to have pickup trucks to carry away the bodies.
Well,
remember but, that?
Yeah, I know. That's just another day in Bush's Iraq. Why bother? They're brown people. We don't worry about them.
People, my God.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like that movie, our favorite movie, Blazing Saddles.
Yes.
When they were out working on the railroad and Slim Pickens was a foreman.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let them just, but don't lose that hand car.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's about the way the attitude these people have.
Sure.
But listen, I want to ask you a question. You mentioned some alternative radio stations like Air America, for example.
Yeah.
Is that available to listen, to hear from this area?
No. No, you got to get it on the internet. And I promise you, I really promise you, Jim, you can. You can. Just go to airamerica.com. Do you have Windows Media Player?
Yeah, I do.
Go to airamericaradio.com. I particularly encourage you to go after this show is over. At 10 o'clock, the guy from 10 to 1 on Air America is pure gold, Mike Malloy.
Really?
Yeah. I admire him. He's smart. He's funny. It'll be worth staying up to 1 o'clock at night for airamericaradio.com. You can go there. You can get him, and you will enjoy yourself.
Well, I've been wondering how to find out. I mean, somebody mentioned how horrible one of the leading Republican real estate developers mentioned something today about how horrible America was.
That's a ringing endorsement in my book.
Well, that's what I thought too. Since you know, I thought, well, you know, I'm going to have to ask Mr. Kincaid because I know he'd be a subject matter expert on this.
Well, and the best part, I heard the reference to the Randy Rhodes show. Oh my God. Jim, if you ever get a chance to listen to Randy Rhodes, she is a gem.
Is she on Air America too?
Yes, she is. She's on from 3 to 7, and you can't. It's like breathing after being underwater for a long time to hear her. It's one of those Jonathan Swift moments. You will know a great person by these portents that wherever they go, they will be surrounded by a confederacy of dunces. The right-wing monkeys are having an absolute fit over Randy Rhodes because she had a skit the other day on her show, at the opening of her show, that had nothing to do with President Bush. It had to do with an old-timer in Florida where Jeb Bush just signed that everybody carry a gun and nobody back down law.
Right.
It was a skit about that, and she... And it was a young whippersnapper trying to steal the old guy's retirement. And so you had the sound effects of 4 gunshots. Bang, 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 bang. And every right wing nut in the country just lost whatever passes for a mind. She's a threatening the president. She's a threatening the president. Oh, jumping Jesus, she's a threatening the president.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Slytherin Scott McClellan commented on it from the White House press gaggle, for God's sakes. Matt Drudge ran an exclusive headline, Secret Service to Investigate Randy Rhodes. You know, meanwhile, you got Tom DeLay out there advocating knocking off the judges.
You know, it's just incredible, isn't it?
Sure.
By the way, it's Jeff's hero, Tom DeLay, that says, why, Justice Kennedy is the one who does his research on the Internet.
I know.
You know, isn't that too much?
Well, I'm particularly fond of the litany we get now. These activist judges are out there relying on international law. oh, those godforsaken doofuses, Jim. The very heart and core of American jurisprudence is based on international law. It's based on England's law, for God's sakes.
You know, I'll tell you something. If this weren't so serious, some of these characters could be about as funny as the Wayans brothers, you know?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you know, they're relying on international law. My God, Jim, the state of Louisiana's is the Napoleonic Code, for God's sakes. How much more?
Exactly right.
And then these, you know, these mouth breathers, you know, I mean, the dumbest of the dumb hollering about this international law business. This is the same crowd that wants to rely on 5,000-year-old international law from a pre-literate people in the desert.
All the way from Hammurabi on down.
I'd feel better if it was Hammurabi.
If there was a lawgiver.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I don't think these people like the last caller said, you know, I did hear him say it, I'm not going to say his name. I don't think they spend a lot of money on books. And really much time reading them, unless maybe they've had Dale's pictures or something like that on the outside. What can I say?
I'm going to let that be what it is, Jim.
Well, you know me, Bob.
I know.
And so there it is. But, you know, I appreciate your time. I wish you well. I will try to get Air America.
Yeah, again, if you've got they're set up for either Windows Media Player or Real Audio.
Okay.
I find I have more success with Windows Media Player. You will be try it. You will be ever so glad that you did.
Well, listen, my friend, I hope you have a good show, and I thank you for your time and your patience and your courtesy as usual.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
And it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Take care.
And, you know, those people who love me, just instead of saying nasty things about me on the message board, I'm going to put my account and routing number up there and just put in a nickel.
Yeah, amen. Sounds good. Hey, wait a minute. I need the nickel.
A thruppence or a farthing will do. I don't care. You know, I can go to the, you know,
All right, Jim.
I don't mind.
Take it easy.
Listen, God bless.
You too. Okay, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and babble for a couple of minutes and then do our bottom of the hour break. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. Yeah, I need a farthing and a tuppence, too. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Where there's a tornado,
or there's a forest fire,
where Mother Nature is at her worst,
we're there. Where there's a search,
where there's a rescue,
where there are Americans in need,
we're there.
When disaster strikes,
we're one volunteer force,
helping each other and simply doing what needs to be done.
We are the Civil Air Patrol,
the official auxiliary of the U.S. Air Force.
To join, call 1-800-FLY-2338.
Or log on to the World Wide Web at www.cap.gov.
It's the 12th annual Beckley Raleigh County Chamber of Commerce Business Show, with over 75 business exhibits on display. Find out what businesses have to offer in Beckley Raleigh County. Network with area business representatives and take advantage of many business show special offers. Free admission, free parking, door prize drawings, exhibitor drawings and giveaways. Thursday, May 5th, 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. Support the Beckley Raleigh County Chamber of Commerce members. They support your community. For more information, call 252-7328.
WWNR Beckley.
A guy who's in no rush to be savage, Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. Almost 25 minutes after 8. Yeah, see, it's a habit. I got to share this with you because from time to time you'll hear callers to this program referring to the fact that, you know, it's only May and it's officially the fourth month, not quite, of Bush's second administration, and already the wheels are flying off in all directions. And, you know, if you can detach yourself from the horrors, the horror, if you can detach yourself enough from the horrors that are the Bush administration, you can have a pretty doggone good time. A conservative, listen. Now, okay, here's your film reference. All right, let's see. Jim brought up Blazing Saddles. I brought up Marathon Man. Okay, here's another one for you. Monty Python's Life of Brian. Now, for those of you familiar with the movie, and for those of you not, just wait patiently. You'll laugh at the next part anyway. For those of you familiar with the movie, there is a scene where they, where young Brian is selling, and this is where the line about Lark's vomit comes from. There's a scene where young Brian is selling goodies inside a gladiatorial arena. And way up in the nosebleed seats, there are four or five people who are plotting to get rid of the Romans. And I think they're the People's Front of Judea. And Brian walks up and says, "Are you the People's Front of Judea?" And they say something nasty to him. And they, "In order to be in the People's Front of Judea, you've really got to hate the Romans." "Oh, I do." "How much?" "A lot. You're in." But then they start talking about, "Well, what about the Judean People's Front?" "Splitters!" So, People's Front of Judea, Judea's People's Front, Popular Front for the blah, blah. A conservative Christian organization that lashed out at the First Lady's weekend comedy routine is lashing out again. This time at critics who claim that the group's Bible-based panning of Mrs. Bush's jokes... Now, see, I had a feeling that the values-based voters would not take too kindly to Mrs. Bush's comments about going to Chippendales and her husband having man-horse relations. She did it! I didn't! This time at critics who claimed that the group's Bible-based panning of Mrs. Bush's jokes and one-liners was itself a joke. Observers say that the high-profile dispute over who can speak for conservative Christians is just the latest in an increasingly heated battle between the, you'll understand the movie reference here, the Coalition for Traditional Values and its eternal rival, the Traditional Values Coalition. I know, it just hurts. A conservative Christian organization that lashed out at the First Lady's weekend comedy routine, lashing out again. The Coalition for Traditional Values, the CTV. Now, write this down. You're going to get lost. I had to read through it like six times before I got it straight. The Coalition for Traditional Values made headlines yesterday when a story appeared on the popular conservative weblog, The Swift Report. In the story, which was picked up by The Drudge Report, Rush Limbaugh, and other media outlets, Coalition for Traditional Values chairman, that's CTV, Pastor Roy DeLong, criticized the First Lady for making jokes that mocked the traditional family structure and publicly undermined her husband at a time when President Bush's masculinity is increasingly under attack. It's not under attack. The guy walks around kissing Arabs and holding hands with them and walking through the blue bonnets. What do you want us to think? But hours after the story appeared, this is where you have to get your notebook out, a rival group called the Traditional Values Coalition came forward with its own version of events. Late yesterday, TVC, this was, okay, so I guess this would be Monday. Late Monday, TVC, the Traditional Values Coalition, released a statement in which it claimed that CTV's criticism of the First Lady's performance is part of a systematic effort to undermine its own work. According to TVC Chairman Reverend Lewis P. Sheldon, as opposed to Reverend Roy DeLong, Reverend Lewis P. Sheldon of the TVC, not the CTV's Roy DeLong, Lewis Sheldon says, "Our computers have seen more viruses than a pediatrician's office. Today's phony press release is just the latest dirty trick aimed at discrediting our efforts on behalf of America's churches." Splitters! The Reverend Sheldon also issued a spirited defense of Mrs. Bush's controversial performance, noting that, "We thought Mrs. Bush's remarks at the correspondents' dinner were hilarious. We are very pleased that she is America's First Lady." But Pastor DeLong, now he's with the CTV, says he's not laughing, quote, "If the Traditional Values Coalition thinks it's funny for the most important woman in America to mock the traditional family structure, I guess I'd have to disagree." He notes that while allies in the campaign to tear down the wall between church and state may differ on the content of humor, it's important to draw a line when it comes to jokes that may violate Judeo-Christian ethics, whatever the hell those might be. What kind of values are we teaching our children when the First Lady stands up in front of the elite from Washington and Hollywood and says that the President of the United States once milked a male horse? Oh, wait, now, this is... Okay, that's the CTV. And of course, they note a number of political observers have expressed concern that a series of gaffes have eroded the president's masculine image. When did he had a masculine image? When did that happen? Last week, Mr. Bush was seen holding hands and kissing Crown Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia. Georgie Ann Abdullah sitting in the tree. K-I-S-S-I-N-G. Then the president raised eyebrows anew when he asked a crowd of supporters in Galveston, Texas, if they celebrated Splash Day, an annual gay pride event in that state, best known for attracting tens of thousands of buff men wearing little more than suntan oil. So, keep your eyes peeled for further installments in the war of words between the Coalition for Traditional Values. Oh, God. And the Traditional Values Coalition. Remember, Traditional Values Coalition, that would be Reverend Louis P. Sheldon. Coalition for Traditional Values, that would be Pastor Roy DeLong. My head's hurting. I need a cigarette. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Now the latest from News Talk 620. Good evening, this is Carl Mack. Governor Manchin is working to smooth over relations with some members of the legislative leadership. Last week, House Majority Leader Rick Staton said he was less than pleased when Governor Manchin used a line item veto to remove language from the budget bill that secured proper funding for the Coal Heritage, Coalfields Expressway, and King Coal Highway authorities. Staton said he was never given an acceptable explanation of the governor's veto action. He hoped to get one last night when the governor spoke before the Mullins Area Chamber of Commerce at Wyoming East High School. Manchin defends his actions, saying he never vetoed money for the highways but simply wanted to ensure the best management practices for the people of West Virginia. The Raleigh County Commission is imposing new rules on subdivision developments. The county will insist on the same requirements set forth by the State Department of Environmental Protection. The new regulations come in response to flooding in the town of Mabscott from development above it and the Crossroads Mall, where runoff from development in that area has caused flooding on Sand Branch Road to increase. A circuit judge has dismissed a lawsuit filed by a losing candidate in last year's Raleigh County Commission race. Michael Fink lost by some 3,000 votes in the May primary to incumbent John Humphrey, then demanded a recount. When there was no change in the results, Fink sued the commission, claiming it had rigged the recount to deny him votes. Circuit Judge H.L. Kirkpatrick has dismissed the lawsuit, saying Fink failed to take action within the 10-day window for complaining. He also said Fink failed to file an election contest with the commission, as the law requires. Now the forecast for the rest of this evening, partly cloudy to clear, but chilly, upper 40s now. Tonight clear with a low in the mid-30s. Tomorrow partly cloudy, high 60. Friday cloudy, high 62. And then by Saturday, mostly sunny with temperatures near 70. And for Mother's Day, mostly sunny with temperatures up in the 70s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
You think you're the only one having a rough time in today's economy, bucko? It's time you started thinking about someone else, such as the rich. Yeah, the rich. Too few Americans give any thought to the hardships of those at the top. Consider something as basic as the sheer physical burden of carrying all that moolah around, the back-breaking weight of their wallets and purses, for example. And it probably never occurs to you that those big diamond earrings and gold necklaces can pull you down by the end of the day. Yeah, yeah, we hear you working stiffs whining all the time about how your paychecks aren't even keeping up with inflation, but stop for a moment and think about the opposite problem. CEOs, for example, already weighted down with personal wealth, have just had another load dumped on them. The pay of the top corporate executives rose by 12.6% last year, averaging nearly $10 million each. And that does not include their stock payments, which can easily double the weight of their total sack. Look at the burden of E. Stanley O'Neill, the big dog at Merrill Lynch. In addition to his salary and bonus, he was given $31 million worth of corporate stock payments. Come on, that's piling on the poor guy. Or Richard Kovacevich at Wells Fargo, who not only had to shoulder a $7.5 million bonus, but also stock payments of $20 million. Imagine having to haul that home. It would be next to impossible for these guys to bear up under such a load, except that, luckily, they're given chauffeured limousines to carry it away. There are also the golf club memberships, the corporate retreat in the South Pacific, the daily rubdown by the executive suite masseuse, and other free perks to help make the burden tolerable. It's a mighty hard row to hoe, but someone has to do it. This is Jim Hightower saying, so when you see the elites floating away in their yachts while you're barely treading water, before you get angry, take a moment to feel their pain.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the magnet.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.pla.org.
WWNR Beckley.
You can be right and be wrong, or be left and be right.
NR with Bob Kincaid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Marcel Marceau. And we're back. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. And, well, I got an email here from our good friend David in South Carolina. He says, watch now as the threat level rises. George has to scare people to get those poll numbers up. And that is generally how they work. He says, also, I don't know if you remember it, but Pigman Limbaugh, yeah, that's Flush Flimball, underwent horse therapy to kick his drug habit. Yeah, you remember when he was in Arizona, drying out from the Oxycontin, or at least trying to, and got to ride horses so he could get over his Jones? And now we've got Mrs. Bush making jokes about her husband having carnal knowledge of a horse? Wow. And this is all from the same party. You remember when Justice Scalia opined about the moral degradation of overturning Texas's anti-sodomy law, and then that freak Rick Santorum from Pennsylvania, the guy who plays with dead fetuses, came out and said, next thing you know, we'll be legalizing man-on-dog sex. Again, if you could divorce yourself from the general bizarreness and dangerous fascism of these cretins, you could have a pretty good laugh. Were they not so dangerous to the very fiber of our republic? These people would be funny in the extreme. funny at least to the Coalition for Traditional Values. Not funny to the traditional values. No, wait. Not funny to the Coalition for Traditional Values, but funny to the Traditional Values Coalition. Programs, programs, get your programs. Can't tell the right-wing religion industry freaks without a program. Programs, programs, get them while they're hot. Let's go to the phones. Yerachmiel is with us. Hey, Yerachmiel, you're head on.
Hello.
Hello.
I am.
Yes, you are.
Okay. I know. Yeah, I'm just trying to clear up this phone quickly as I can.
Okay.
I listened to you on the speakerphone, so we say hello, and then I run over to the phone.
That's real. That way you can get things done.
Well, I'll get some exercise, too, running over to the phone. I need it. You know, I'd like to, there's a lot of stuff going on. First of all, I'd like to share with you a hot item. I just got a phone call from hell.
From hell?
Yeah, and it was Ronald Reagan.
Okay.
And he said he wants me to deliver a message to you about the dog-eat-dog, man-eat-man, Darwinian Reaganomic agenda that's going on.
Okay.
It's two lines. It goes like this. A poor man came knocking at my door, said, sorry, son, the corporation don't got here before. And that's the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay. Well, that takes care of that. Too bad nobody called me from heaven. I guess it's more exciting to get a phone call from hell anyhow.
Well, I mean, if you're going to get a phone call from a Republican beyond the pale, it's by definition going to come from hell, Yerachmiel.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is, why should the people interrupt their harp music to talk to us?
Yeah. And there's wing polish or halo polishing and wing fluffing. Yeah, they're busy.
Yeah. You know, why is that having a good time? They're having fun.
You know,
why did they ruin it?
Yeah, and it takes a lot to keep the sheen and the patina on those pearly gates.
Yeah. You know, and about George Bush sycophanting with a king, what's his name, Abdullah?
Yeah, Crown Prince Abdullah.
Yeah, I'd like to say, as I've said way around after 9/11, I said, bowing to the Bedouin for a barrel of oil, is that not what he's doing?
Yes.
And is he not, look, it just drives me crazy. Look, I'm aware that Islamic men hold hands. I know about that.
I do, too.
I've heard about it, and I've met Islamic people who, you know, told me about it.
And more particularly, it's a Saudi thing.
Saudi and Iraq, some people do it. It's done in Iraq and Egypt.
Yeah.
It's done in various places. But also, I'm aware, you know, okay, if you go to the mosque, it's a hypothetical situation. You're a devout Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you may not go to the mosque 5 times a day, but hypothetically, you go to the mosque 5 times a day. You do salat with the congregation, which is the ideal way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of each salat, you turn to your neighbor, you hug each other, and kiss each other on either cheek.
Mm-hmm.
That's the custom. Now, you know, that's their custom.
They're welcome to it.
They're welcome to it. I am not a Muslim. You've heard me all these months. Trying to understand, you know, people should not slander the Islamic religion.
Right.
I'm not I'm very fond of it. I didn't see anything, by the way, in the Quran where you have to do all of these things. But
I know.
That's another story.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I resent, as much as I defend Islam, I resent it. There seems to be understood that there's a certain amount of deference to the Muslim.
Yes.
Which is due him. And I, as a Jeffersonian American, resent that very much.
Absolutely, Yerachmiel. You couldn't have said it better.
Respect, you know, like I say, they have the greatest respect for him, as I respect Buddhists and everybody. God bless them. They all have good qualities. I don't understand everybody. I understand the Indians better than I understand the Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand. I'm not freaked out when I read about Sundance. You know, they do practices which white men consider barbaric. They even outlawed them in many places.
Right.
Many states. I understand where they're coming from. I understand they're close to nature and they have these feelings. It's deep. You know, if they dance backwards from the pole with a skewer, you know, in their chest, one particular tribe, for example, and they dance backward and it tears the skin open. That's no different to me than circumcision.
Yeah.
That's their connection. The way, what they believe to be the powers, you know, it's not Abrahamic monotheism.
Right.
But that is their culture.
Sure.
And it's deep, we attack everything that we don't understand. You know, not us, you or me, but you know, they cut them so when they go hunting, they do scarification. Now, I don't do stuff like that, but I just understand these people.
Yeah.
You know, and what I'm saying is, as a Judeo-Christian American and so on, I'm tolerant of it. I don't care as long as I don't have to do it.
Right.
And I'd probably sooner be easier for me to do scarifications before hunting. Though I would, you know, I'm not going to do it, but the point is I could hypothetically do it.
Right.
Because I can't get the feeling of it.
Unless I could hug
a man and kiss a man five times a day, and you're not allowed to touch a woman.
Yeah, I can't get my mind around that one either.
I once there was a time when I was younger, I would visit different, you know, I visited a mosque. Well, it was a Sufi mosque, so it was easier for me.
Right.
More tolerant. And I did the thing there, and I noticed, you got to be good, modest, you know, most you can do is to talk to a couple of women there about religion and stuff, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Very Victorian. And, okay, and I respect that too. But I said to myself, there's a lot of aspects of this prayer, you know, bowing and stuff, like the Bible, you know. But I didn't like it. I went into the mosque. I know a little bit about it. I sort of, you know, prayed along with them. I didn't know all the words, you know. But, you know, I did the motions. And I did it a little while. I said to myself, you know, this is not a thing for me. I felt a little bit off balance, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So then I went, I took a trip downtown. I was in Philadelphia. I went to the Middle East restaurant. And of course, Jennifer came over to me. She was very nice. And she did a back bend, right, in front of my, you know, in front of me, literally. You know, like in front of my, where I was sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And she tried to get a tip, you know, it's like, I just rolled up a dollar bill. I couldn't get it in her G-string because it was too tight, and I was afraid to pull it because I thought it would break, so what the heck, I gave the yank and shoved it in the end. Would have been a scene, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I felt at that moment that I was back with God again.
Yeah.
This is what I'm trying to say. I'm going back to this custom. I felt something was unnatural about that.
Well, and
I can't judge anyone else. That's their custom. I can say.
Sure.
What I'm saying is, in my mind,
Yerachmiel, when George Bush goes to Saudi Arabia, I want him to hold hands. I want him to make sure that he eats only with his right hand and never with his left.
Right.
I hope they will brief him and make sure that he never shows the soles of his feet to any of his hosts. I want him to hug, I want him to kiss, I want him to do all that stuff when he's in Saudi Arabia. Now, on the other hand, when you're in Crawford, Texas, it seems a little contrived, doesn't it, Yerachmiel?
Well, the thing is, if we got our oil from Cuba, would we be doing the mambo and chanting voodoo incantations?
If you're a Republican, you're darn right. You're absolutely right.
This disturbs the hell out of me. We are a strong nation. Well, we're a strong nation. I'm ready to cry.
Now back up, Yerachmiel. I got a sense in what you said about how, it, as a Jeffersonian Democrat, you were offended by these overt manifestations of what I consider to be religious pandering. I had that same sense of upset when we lowered the flag to half staff over the death of John Paul II. That was an extreme affront to our secular state. I was offended.
Politics at its worst.
Yes, it absolutely is.
At its worst. Why can't we, you know, show that we have respect for people in a more neutral way. You know, we're like, okay, I could communicate with you. I don't expect you to say Shalom Aleichem or Salam Aleikum or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or, I've met Muslims and some people have a tendency. Okay, let me give an example. I met a lot of black Muslims in Philadelphia. They're mostly the ones who talk to me, you know, but
mm-hmm.
one of them said to me, oh, we don't say God, we say Allah, because God, with a small g, refers to the pagan gods, and you don't know if it's a small g or a capital G when you pronounce it. And I said to myself, and he said, oh, if that's how you should speak, that's how, if you want to have respect for a Muslim, that's how you should speak. I have to have respect for a Muslim? Whom do they have respect for?
I understand, and you are, and lest anyone make the mistake, you're not manifesting any kind of religious intolerance in saying that. You're absolutely right.
No, I tolerate this. Why can't they tolerate? And that's the thing. Way before 9/11, years before, during the Clinton administration, I was sitting there in my cabin. I don't live in the cabin in the woods anymore, but years ago, sitting there in my cabin, saying to myself, "When are we going to have a war? When are we going to have? Not that I wanted one." I'm not saying when I'm going to have one, because I was hoping, you know. I just say to myself, so when is this going to happen?
Because you can smell it in the wind.
Oh, you know, and when is our government going to stop allowing terrorists to kill American citizens all those years? I don't care if it's Clinton, Bush, you know, this, that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Somebody, the FBI, the CIA, the Congress. Oh, the Congress was busy with Monica Lewinsky, you know, and my...
Well, not just the Congress, a big chunk of the FBI was busy with her, too.
Well, he took an oath to defend us. He swore to defend us. And he and that Condi Rice, that idiot, I'm going to be frank with you. I'm going to say something that I'm going to take a lot of, people are going to give me a lot of help for it. But if you're looking for a hench person, you hire a black woman.
Right, but, well, I understand what you're saying, because the reason she is in the position she is in is because the Republicans feel like by putting her there, they have put her above reproach, because no progressive, no Democrat, no liberal can criticize her, because then they can play the race card. And they did that.
I'll tell you something else. They're very loyal to their bosses, and they're tough.
Yeah.
If you're looking for somebody tough, don't hire Colin Powell. I don't care if you've seen combat or what. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't hire Bin Laden, you know. Don't hire the toughest guy. Hire one of those. And because I've been in government agencies where I have never in my life, I've never had trouble with a black police officer. I've never had any serious problem with a black official. Sometimes officials can be nasty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But as a man, male once,
yeah.
I've had the nicest men. Black men working together, they're understanding, they try to do the best, you know, you feel at least somebody's trying to do right, you know.
Yeah, people are people.
Yeah, but the thing is, I've met a lot of black women in government, you know, in positions where they abuse their power. I'm serious. And not one or two or three, you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I've dealt with this in Philadelphia, I've dealt with some people in Washington, D.C., at least over the phone. They're horrible. I mean, Hitler couldn't have gotten a better hench person.
An enforcer.
You know, they'll give you hell. It's a nightmare. Franz Kafka never mentioned anything like this.
Well, the fact is, oh boy, nah, not even going to try. Not even going to try. I'm going to get myself in trouble for going somewhere that.
Right. I already went into dangerous territory.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and where Condi...
I'm not the host.
No, where Condi is concerned, Yerachmiel, she is incompetent on about 16 dozen different levels, not the least of which, you know, for God's sakes, her realm of study was intervention and warfare and diplomacy with the Soviets. I mean, it's like... What? It's like putting her in the state in charge of the State Department is like putting a buggy whip manufacturer in charge of the Ferrari assembly line. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, no. Well, in any case, she same thing when she was likewise when she was advisor on security.
Yeah.
She had no background.
She obviously didn't. She obviously didn't have enough background to look at an August 6, 2001 presidential daily briefing from the CIA that's titled "Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S." She didn't have. She didn't have enough common sense to look at that and realize that that was a threat and a warning. She sat there
and
under.
We have to consider not only did she not have enough common sense, but apparently, as I've claimed, this Machiavellian hoax, where supposedly, unsuspectedly, we were attacked. George Bush was nearly in tears. He said, "If I would have, you think if I would have known that all those people would have been killed, that I would not have tried to save them." Oh, come on. Come on.
I know.
Mind cops.
You know, I mean.
Oh, I heard Pat Robertson to speak. Look, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Establish a theocracy. Pat Robertson said, "Oh, what? He established a theocracy? What? George Bush established a theocracy? What? Jerry Falwell established a theocracy? Of course, the theocracy is to control people. It's not that they believe in God.
No.
You know, but they do want a theocracy in order to faith-based initiatives, amendment on the Constitution about gay marriage. You know, and I'm against gay marriage, but that's not how you deal with this stuff.
I tell you what, before you go, Your Honor, I wanted to remind you, I wanted to let you know, you're interested in these right-wing hate mongers. I want you to, if you get a chance, go to the library, whatever, do some reading on a guy named R.J. Rushdoony. R-U-S-H-D-O-O-N-Y, Rushdoony.
R-U-S-H-D-O-O-N-Y.
This guy is the
R-H.
R-U-S-H-D-O-O-N-Y, R.J. Rushdoony. This is the father of the Christian identity and the Christian Reconstructionist movement, to which Robertson and Falwell and that whole crowd subscribe.
Let me explain, and
when you will understand a lot more about where these people are coming from if you will learn about this man. He died not too awfully long ago.
Well, the thing is, listen, I, as somebody who used to be an Orthodox Jew many years ago, I hear Orthodox rabbis, Orthodox organizations, Orthodox people voting for George Bush.
Oh my God. I know.
Throw the Talmud out of the window. And Muslims and Arabs, because they're conservative, they vote conservative.
Well, you mentioned...
What are they trying to do? Slit their own throats?
Yes.
How could they decide?
You can't call it anything other than that, Yerachmiel. You cannot. Because, again, in the worldview of these Reconstructionists, at some point in time, they're going to... Remember, only 144,000 Jews are going to be saved. The rest of them, they get to kill.
George Bush is a good. He's a religious Jew. He's a Yid. He keeps the Shulchan Aruch. He doesn't allow gay marriages. He follows the rabbis.
Oy gewalt.
He eats kosher. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's that kosher pig barbecue that he's eating all the time.
Benjamin Netanyahu was on the 700 Club.
Oh yeah.
After 9/11. My goodness, Benjamin Netanyahu on the 7th, he might as well have been on the 666 Club.
Bingo. We got to get out of here, Yerachmiel. Thanks. Thanks for the observations. All right. Time for our top of the hour break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On.
Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history. You can depend on us. News Talk 620, WWNR, Beckley. It's 9 o'clock.
If you're an older adult, be medicine smart. For the free brochure, As You Age, Guide to Aging, Medicines and Alcohol, call 1-800-662-HELP. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and this station.
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Average low, well, we're going to be well below that at 38 by early tomorrow. A mainly clear sky into this evening and overnight. As we look at Thursday afternoon, a mix of clouds and sunshine in the morning will give way to increasing clouds as the system approaches. Slight chance for a late day shower. High 59. Look for a 30% risk of rain Thursday night. Friday, same story, 62. Then back to partial sun on Saturday.
WWNR Beckley.
Shining a liberal light in the conservative darkness. Bob Kincaid, Ann Arbor.
Welcome back. 6 minutes after nine. And straight to the phones, 252-6200, outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. That's WWNR. Ed is with us. Hey, Ed, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
It's going good. You?
I'm doing pretty good. I was over at the hospital. I met Wayne today, and, boy, what a great guy he is.
Didn't he?
He's just got the people at heart, and he's doing... I was so impressed with him starting this informational picket or whatever it would be classified over there. But I got a chance to look at this Rocco,
easy,
whatever his name is,
easy,
today, and I'm not, you know, they, I know you made the apology earlier, but to me, it, the same thing goes. I could tell, they come down there within about 75 yards of where we're at, tried to do the same old tactics with the talking into the tape recorder and all this. I've seen it 10 times.
Tape
already.
Recorder?
And that intimidation stuff.
Wait. Back, Ed, back up. Tape recorder?
They had a thing that's talking into Mike, what they call dictaphone or whatever.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what all the conversation was with theirself, but it's just another tactic to try to intimidate people out there, and they couldn't intimidate nobody there.
That went on.
It's the same old thing, Bob. I mean, you know, we've seen it with the cops. The cops, I imagine, but they were friendly. They waved, and we offered one of the security guards to come down there to make sure we didn't get on their property.
Mm-hmm.
We offered him a sign to carry, and he had... turn it down. But anyway, it was really a refreshing thing for me because I've been out of action for about 25 years now.
Kind of good to get back in the fray.
Yeah, it is. And I'm so glad that I heard. And you know what? Last night, I was talking to a friend of mine that lives over there, and I heard him say about going being there at 11:30.
Mm-hmm.
And I started getting my shoes and stuff on and turning it off. And then I talked to my friend, and he said, "No, that's tomorrow." Well, I didn't know. I didn't hear the part where you said, "You mean tomorrow?" I was coming over to meet him then, and I.
God bless you, Ed.
So I'm glad I made the call anyway. But anyway, we had the typical preacher come down there and wanted to know why we didn't have the old District 50 or the steel workers really posted on our sign too, you know. And we asked him what his problem was, you know, that we represented anybody that was mistreated. And he was a typical preacher. I thought he was going to have a collection plate there for a while. He started telling us about, are we saved or something. I can't remember the rhetoric.
Did he wait for the chicken dinner?
Huh?
Did he wait for the chicken dinner?
Yeah, I know. But anyway, the nurse is there. I still feel sorry for him. They're in a very... unpredictable situation, really. It's predictable in the effect that they're going to try to keep them oppressed and make them afraid to talk and this type of stuff. But they got Lock City on this case here. And, you know, if that outfit was smart before they caused any more problems, they would call them people and apologize and clear their record, take those reprimands or whatever they want to classify them as.
Well, you know, I that's why I did what I did. The gentleman felt like he had been personally attacked. Of course, that was not my intent, and it was certainly not what I was trying to do. But you know, I'm a big man. I'm a big man when I can admit when I'm wrong, and if a person feels like I have wronged them, you know, I was raised right, and I took seriously some of the stuff I got growing up, Ed. And I can tender an apology when an apology is needed. So I tendered it sincerely, and graciously. Because that person perceived me to be in the wrong. And that was just the right thing to do.
Well,
now those nurses perceive them to be in the wrong. One wonders if they are as big as I am.
Well, no, I can tell you no, because they come down there with that attitude like, hey, we're watching you. I wanted to invite them over, but you know what that would have done? That would have got the police in the things, because, you know, it's so obvious, come sucking bags, you know, and I tell him, I hope he's listening, but I have no use for him because he's got that over. I've seen that out of companies that I've organized until they were brought down to where they could be talked to, so many times, and I'm not impressed by it. I just feel sorry that for people that have to work under that situation. And the nurses are a very bad situation. If they all would walk out, then they have...
Well, they've got a no-strike clause in their contract, Ed.
Well, that's the problem. That plus, if they would go ahead and walk out, then the public, we got an excellent response from the public. You know, about, I'd say, 7 out of 10 people were blowing and supporting us as they went by.
Good.
And you don't want to mess that up. But the problem is the nurses care more about those people than what those clowns come down there trying to, with their intimidating tactics. The nurses care more than they did because they're after the money. They don't want their image messed up by us being there. And, you know, the only way they're going to get rid of us is come on out with an apology or until it's won and they made look like the fools they are.
Well,
and I have no apologies for that guy. You know, he was right there, if I'm not mistaken. He drives a big red Cadillac and has sort of got light-colored hair.
Okay.
And if that's him, I have no apologies because I could, you know how you can read the vibes off of somebody if they're 100 yards away?
Yeah.
That's what I got off of him, and I don't think it was that's misrepresenting at all. I wasn't the only one that done that, but we had some good support.
Well, you know, again, I've had a lot of emails, Ed, people talking about the quality of care there, the quality of care being quite good, how hard those nurses work, how dedicated they are, and what a good facility those nurses make it. And I have no reason to doubt that. I believe it is as good or better a facility as exists in this area.
Maybe, but
the question remains: how do
they
you...
don't get the credit for making it good? It's,
right.
It's these drones that was down there today with their dictaphones or whatever. They get the credit for that. Our hospital, our this, our that. But really, it's always the worker that makes the things. If things go bad, the worker gets blamed for that, but if they go good, then the drones take the credit.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in that, Ed. Well, I was always told growing up that, for instance, where we talk, you know, about churches, that the church is not the building, but the people in it.
Yeah.
And you can only measure a hospital by the dedication and compassion and care of the people who are there with the patients on a day-to-day basis. And it is my understanding that the people who work with the patients are A+, top-notch, top-shelf, you know, bar none, awesome workers. And what more can you say than that?
Yeah. Well, the thing of it is, you look at the barrel full of money and it's full there, and you know who made it. It wasn't them sitting back on their big blubber butts and counting it. It was the people that doesn't work that brought that in.
And that's
credit. But those people are... to start with, I don't think many of them know their rights. That's a poor union, and I don't like to say that about any union, but we kicked the old District 50 steel workers out and took in UAW because of their poor representation. And that preacher coming out there like I did is typical.
Well, where did he even come from, Ed?
Huh?
Why was there a preacher there?
Well, he works there. He called himself a reverend something. I can't remember his name, but he come out there, and he said, "Well, why ain't y'all representing the steel workers here?" We told him we represented all unions.
What was his beef with the steel workers?
Unions and so forth. And he said, "Well, why ain't you got a District 50 on it?" We asked him, "Well, what's your problem? Why do you think we should be singling you out?" He couldn't even give an answer. He didn't have a reason. He just wanted to run his mouth. He's one of them typical preachers that's a George Bush supporter, and really he wanted to go back in and tell the company, I guess, what a big job he did. But I'm going to tell him one thing. I tell the company one thing. They better keep their dogs inside. That's a real good idea. We don't want no trouble. We come there just to show support for the nurses.
Yeah.
If I want to go hear a lecture from a preacher, I'll go to church on Sunday.
Well, mercy me. That's just mind-boggling. Ed, let me thank you again for going out and standing up for those working people.
Well, Bob, it's really good to get active. Again, it's been rather than talking about it, I haven't done a whole lot, but there hasn't been a whole lot stirred, and I would not have thought of doing what Wayne did, and he is such a good guy, and he is a people's person.
Yeah,
when I saw him, I had to walk up, there's three or four people standing there, I said, does anybody here named Wayne? And he reached out his hand, and he certainly is not like I pictured him. Is he? Not,
you had him, what did you have him, about 12 feet tall?
I figured, well, this guy is a lot like I talk, probably, he's,
Well, I know this much. If Beckley had a dozen Waynes, every worker in this area would have a better life as a result.
Yeah. Well, that's what's missing out of our society now is the union activity is not as strong and is not as organized among the workers as it used to be, and it's a political failure because they're not. Because used to be, we have played a big hand in this county over here in politics, and the politicians knew that they wouldn't be going back if they got too far out of line.
Yeah,
and that's the thing that's missing. The control for the worker is not there that it used to be. And then you got the Steve O'Briens and Rush Limbaughs, and who's the other one? The guy that talked about walking around with daggers sticking out of people's chests and stuff. Oh, I can't think of his name.
Who, Savage or
Savage? Yeah, Michael Savage or whatever his name is. You've got that kind of mentality out there. And if enough people, and like I said, Bob, I'm serious about taking out that ad. And
well, we'll sit down. We'll have a chat about that, Ed.
Okay, because if the people knew that these programs is on, at least they could have a choice, and they would see you as you are, and then compare it with these other knuckleheads that's on the air. That would help them separate what is true, because a lot of people would listen to it as they go back and forth to wherever they're going, be able to determine what to do.
I tell you what, Ed, we'll just keep striking that steel against that flint, and pretty soon we'll have us a little fire, and maybe after that we'll have us we'll grow it from there.
Well, I've been there anyway.
All right.
I'm waiting.
All right, thanks, Ed. We got to roll.
All right, see you later.
Take care now. All right, and let's see. Quick break, then we'll come back. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Any of you guys out there looking for the girl next door? Because I know where you can find her. Cupid.com. It's a place to meet women that live close by. Cupid.com isn't interested in compiling some big worldwide network. They're focused on putting you in touch with the cuties you pass on your way to work. People who share your same area code. Basic Cupid memberships are free with zero obligations. You can even apply to messages from gold members, a service you usually pay for on other sites. You can remain anonymous and still put Cupid's auto match to work, locating women with your favorite traits and qualities. Bigger online dating sites show you a universe of women, which is perfect if you're into long-distance relationships. But Cupid.com shrinks that world to women right in your backyard, because the girl next door never lives three states away. Find your true love at Cupid.com, either online or at one of our fun local events.
Cupid.com. Advertising locally on great radio stations to bring people together for love.
WWNR Beckley.
Here's Bob Kincaid. Head on.
Welcome back. No time check. No time check, Bob. No time check. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Some of the things I had mentioned earlier, and I didn't, honestly, I didn't have the story in my hand at the time, from the Associated Press today, and our good friend Lawrence Messina. Labor Commissioner Jim Lewis said his office is looking into complaints that some hospitals fail to pay nurses adequately when scheduling them to be on call during shifts. Lewis did not identify the hospitals involved. We've had complaints from just about all parts of the state. And see, I tell you, we have an example of it going here, but it is a systemic problem from a broken system. According to Jim Lewis, it's pretty much preliminary, the investigation is at this point. Until we do the investigation, we won't know if there's a violation or not. This has to do with a law that was passed, as I said, about a year ago, that bars most hospitals from forcing nurses to work overtime during non-emergencies. As a patient safety measure, it also limits voluntary overtime for most nurses to 16 hours during a 24-hour period. Oh, well, only 16? Newsflash, during a 24-hour period, once you factor in the commute to work and the commute to home, and maybe having a bite of lunch and a bite of dinner, what are you looking at? 4 or 5 hours of sleep? Again, I submit to you the question. Would you get on a bus with a driver who had been behind the wheel for 16 hours? Would you get on a plane? Would you get in a cab? If you had been up for 16 continuous hours, would you put your little children in their car seats in the back and go toddling off on a vacation to Myrtle? I submit to you that you would not. Why then do we tolerate the abuse of healthcare professionals, workers, nurses? And I see it as abuse. The first minute after hour number 8 is abuse. You enforce an 8-hour day on hospitals, they're going to hire more nurses. More people are going to have work. Oh, there I go again. Wild-eyed, name-calling liberal that I am. Delegate Bobby Hatfield, good woman, Democrat from Kanawha County. She's also a nurse. She said a number of nurses have approached her about being paid reduced hourly rates when placed on call or standby, either at their hospitals or at home. And she noted, for some of these nurses, it's happened ever since they started work. And Cherie Heflin, a lobbyist for the West Virginia Nurses Association, said her group has fielded complaints about both on-call staffing and overtime. We know, she says, that part of the problem is that the rules for implementing the bill have not been adopted by the legislature. Oh wait a minute! No, have not been adopted by the legislature. We also have some very clear issues that must be resolved. Have not been adopted by the legislature? Wonder if the hospital lobby got to the legislature. Or maybe adopting those rules got set aside in the mad rush to craft a tongue-splitting bill. Oh, God. Now, Tony Gregory is a lobbyist for the West Virginia Hospital Association. And being a lobbyist, he said, "We view the rulemaking review process as the next logical step in continuing the dialogue on this." Yes, by all means, Mr. Gregory, continue the dialogue, but for God's sakes, don't implement the rules and pay these people what they're worth. "It is our hope that we address the outstanding questions that have arisen since the bill went into effect through the rulemaking process." And I can just imagine that the West Virginia Hospital Association is sitting there, you know, whispering in the ear, "Now you pursue this, Mr. Legislator, with all deliberate speed." We've talked about all deliberate speed before, haven't we? Yeah, that was the language that was, what was it, Brown versus Board of Education? to integrate the schools with all deliberate speed, when if you go and look at the definition of deliberate means slow. So once again, another instance where the legislature has let us down.
Well, Bob, who's been in charge of this state for the...
Oh, shut up. Conservatives have been in charge of this state for the last 70 years, 100 years, and look where it got us. Oh, and by the way, I don't guess there were any Republicans out there knocking down the cotton-picking doors trying to get these rules established to keep the people who look after our loved ones when they are deathly ill. To get those rules. No, there weren't any. No, sorry. Slick Vic, need another wife, Sprouse. Wasn't out there advocating putting these rules together to keep nurses from having to work 16 and 20 hour days. Nope, sorry. Hear the crickets? A lot of crickets when you talk about Republicans standing up for workers, because they don't do it. God knows. Wait a minute. Stop it. God knows it's hard enough to find Democrats who will stand up for workers. We got a few. Lord, we're so grateful to meet them when we find them. It's like walking across the faceless and trackless desert. One person starting at one end and the other at the other with nothing to guide them, and lo and behold, they meet happily in the middle. It's almost like a miracle sometimes when you find a worker that's, or a politician that's willing to stand up for a worker. Although one must admit, you're more likely to meet them on the Democratic side of it. Well, more likely, the ones that will stand up for workers, you will meet on the Democratic side of the fence. Because Republicans don't give a tinker's damn about a worker. Never have. Never will. Expecting a Republican to care about the rights of a worker is like, come on, an analogy. Expecting the tiger to change his stripes. That was weak. I was hoping for something better than that. So, I mean, you do at least understand that we're talking about working people, and we're talking about an intolerable situation where nurses, and see, I got that sexist thing going. I keep wanting to say these women. I know there's lots of guys in the nursing profession. These people are not asked, but are compelled to work off the clock or to be told that they are on call in the building and not paid the same rate. That's a ripoff. And best of luck. Plus, this doesn't take any luck. But our admiration goes out to the West Virginia Department of Labor for looking into this statewide problem. Okay, bottom of the hour break when we come back. Your phone calls at 252-6200. Outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Now the latest from News Talk 620. Good evening, this is Carl Mack. Governor Manchin is working to smooth over relations with some members of the legislative leadership. Last week, House Majority Leader Rick Staton said he was less than pleased when Governor Manchin used a line item veto to remove language from the budget bill that secured proper funding for the Coal Heritage, Coal Fields Expressway, and King Coal Highway authorities. Staton said he was never given an acceptable explanation of the governor's veto action. He hoped to get one last night when the governor spoke before the Mullins Area Chamber of Commerce at Wyoming East High School. Manchin defends his actions, saying he never vetoed money for the highways, but simply wanted to ensure the best management practices for the people of West Virginia. The Raleigh County Commission is imposing new rules on subdivision developments. The county will insist on the same requirements set forth by the State Department of Environmental Protection. The new regulations come in response to flooding in the town of Mabscott from development above it and the Crossroads Mall, where runoff from development in that area has caused flooding on Sand Branch Road to increase. A circuit judge has dismissed a lawsuit filed by a losing candidate in last year's Raleigh County Commission race. Michael Fink lost by some 3,000 votes in the May primary to incumbent John Humphrey, then demanded a recount. When there was no change in the results, Fink sued the commission, claiming it had rigged the recount to deny him votes. Circuit Judge H.L. Kirkpatrick has dismissed the lawsuit, saying Fink failed to take action within the 10-day window for complaining. He also said Fink failed to file an election contest with the commission, as the law requires. Now the forecast for the rest of this evening, partly cloudy to clear, but chilly, upper 40s now. Tonight clear with a low in the mid-30s. Tomorrow partly cloudy, high 60. Friday cloudy, high 62. And then by Saturday, mostly sunny with temperatures near 70. And for Mother's Day, mostly sunny with temperatures up in the 70s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
This is America on the Road. After 20 years on the U.S. car market, the Mercury Sable is going away. We'll be right back with all the details. Stay tuned.
A Driving Today Minute. Now that gasoline prices are reaching a record level, some people are panicking. Happily, there are things you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy says, keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds. So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life. This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners like autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
This is Jackie Redd. Ford has announced that its Mercury division will end production of the Mercury Sable late this month. The Sable was the under-the-sheet metal twin of the Ford Taurus. And the Ford Taurus was once the best-selling car in the United States, but lately sales of both the Taurus and Sable have slowed down. Ford will continue to build the Taurus, but at the end of this month, Sable will be no more. The last Sable is scheduled to be built at Ford's Atlanta assembly plant. The Sable will be replaced in the Mercury lineup by the new Milan model, which will be built in Mexico and go on sale this fall.
This is Mike Hansen. U.S. sales of the Mercury Sable, which debuted in 1985, have been disappointing lately. Sales fell 38% in 2003, another 30% in 2004, and they're down 20% so far this year. Mercury, which has struggled to define itself as a nameplate and has lost ground to the foreign nameplates, is hoping to rope in younger buyers with this new Mazda 6-based Milan. Last year, Mercury sold fewer than 200,000 vehicles in the U.S., but they're up 12% so far this year with the release of the Montego and the Mariner, which is a twin of the Ford Escape compact sport utility vehicle.
So bye-bye to the Sable and hello, Milan, and we'll have more next time on America on the Road from CBS Westwood One.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back, thanking me for my concerns, and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving out 2 indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may contain vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
WWNR Beckley.
He's got the heart of a conservative. Pickled on a jar on his desk. Here's Bob Kincaid.
All right. We're back. I'm Bob Kincaid. And you've got a few more minutes to get your licks in if you want to. Your thoughts, your considerations, your ruminations, fulminations, machinations, whatever you got. Email, of course, is bob@headonradio.com. And the phone number is 252-6200 outside Beckley, 800-620-WWNR, 9967. Kyle is with us. Hey, Kyle, you're head on.
Hi, Bob. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. You?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Let me make sure I understand this. You never voted for a Republican, right?
Never.
Never. Never in your life?
Never.
And conservatives have been in charge for the last 50 years?
Yeah, people bought at 70, probably, maybe 100. You know, people...
And those
people,
are mainly Democrats.
Conservative Democrats? Democrats, absolutely.
You voted...
This was part of the Solid South once upon a time, Kyle.
Okay, so you voted for these Democrats, and those Democrats are the ones that, I mean, you know.
Did I say I voted for them?
Oh, you. What did you do? Stop voting?
No. No, but I am not. I am absolutely not afraid to leave a box blank.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood that, because you say you never voted for a Democrat. You can't be a Democrat if you're a conservative.
No, I didn't say that. I said conservatism has run this state for 70 years, Kyle. Pay attention.
So you voted for a few conservatives, haven't you?
I have voted for people that I have come to regret my vote, yes.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure I understood that. Now, let me tell you this. On the situation with Bar H,
yeah.
I was by there four times today.
Uh-huh.
I blew my horn all four times.
Good boy. Good man.
One of the times I went by, I had a nurse in the car with me.
Yeah?
And she said, why'd you blow? I said, so I explained the situation to her. Okay?
Yeah.
This lady is a regular of mine.
Yeah.
Okay? And she heard, what was his name? It was on, that went on and on about he's an organizer.
Ed? Ex-organizer?
Ed, yeah. And she was like me. She heard this. I turned off Hannity and Combs and was listening to you. And she called me. And said, did you hear that? She says, I support those people. I'm behind them 100%. I said, I told you the same thing. I said, me too.
Yeah.
She said, why do they have to dive Bush into this? Ed, you're not doing any favors for yourself, fella. But tying Bush to our support of those people. I think they're wrong, Ed. Are you listening, Ed? I think what has been done to those nurses is absolutely wrong. And I voted for George Bush, Ed. So don't tie George Bush to this, Ed. Please. You want us to support you, but because we voted for Bush, do you not need our support, Ed?
Well, I think you're coming at it from a slightly different angle.
Well,
Kyle.
I'm not coming from any slightly. This lady was so upset, she called me. I've got my caller ID right here.
Okay.
And I'm not going to mention the lady's name.
Well, good.
But she said, Kyle, we discuss this guy. And she's a black lady.
Uh-huh. Oh, my God. And she voted for Bush?
Oh, yes, she did.
Oh, that's the chicken voting for Colonel Sanders again.
Well... See there, Bob?
There are a lot of people who cast votes for George Bush for reasons that I think everybody now knows, Kyle, make no sense.
That has nothing with my point, Bob. But, you know, it ticks me off because, okay, Ed, if I voted for Bush, Ed...
Hey, Ed's not here. Ed's not here, Kyle. You know, I'm here.
Well, Ed's listening. And that's my whole point. You know, Ed wants to get on there and rip everybody for voting for George Bush, but yet when it comes to me supporting something that Ed supports, same thing with Wayne. I love Wayne.
Okay,
And I'll tell you something, and if Wayne's listening right now, you know, I was a little ticked off the way Steve treated Wayne on his program today. I was a little ticked off about it. I would like to have heard what Wayne had to say.
Oh, so we got a screen fest instead?
Basically, and I'm sorry, I love Steve. He's a good friend of mine. You know,
well, I want to back up for a minute. I don't want us to, you know, get into too much of the he said, she said. But you have to understand where I come from, Kyle, and where people like Ed are coming from, and the pro and the very pro-labor people are coming from. You know, you profess to stand with working people. You're working people yourself, right, Kyle?
Turn right, 12 hours a day, my man.
Right.
I go 5 in the morning, and I get home at 6:30 at night.
Well, here's a story. I just got it in my email from our friend David. The Bush Labor Department has threatened organized labor in a letter made public yesterday that they had better not use money from pension funds to lobby against Bush's proposal to overhaul Social Security. Now, this is the second time they've done this. They threatened and investigated the NAACP for something similar. Meanwhile, they can't investigate Armstrong Williams being bought off. Ken Lay is still walking around free.
Well, Bob, I'm not going to argue that with you.
But
Bob,
do you understand? We've got the overtime rules, and the list is almost endless. This is a very anti-working people administration. Can you see how some of us might find a disconnect or a dichotomy between your support for working people that you know and live with and have contact with, and at the same time supporting a guy who despises those workers?
I don't know that he despises those workers, Bob. I've not seen that from him. I saw a lot of those workers stand behind him, and I saw a lot of those workers stand behind Dick Cheney when Dick Cheney was here. But my whole point is this. You're not making any ground with those of us that are conservatives and are Republicans and conservative Democrats when you say, if you voted for Bush, you voted America into hell. Well, I'm sorry, I don't feel that way. And you're not making any friends doing that, Bob. The Democrats have been, you've been doing this name calling for how many years now?
Hey, look, you know, and if I do any name calling, Kyle, I always precede it with facts. Just like I just gave you a litany of facts of what the Bush administration has done to working people.
Okay, Bob, that's fine. But now, calling me names because I voted for George Bush is not making any inroads.
Kyle,
those nurses to know right now tonight, that despite what I've heard on this program tonight, I feel I strongly support what you're doing, and I feel for those women.
Men.
There I go again, being like you, I was being chauvinistic there. But those people that are out there, that situation is awful, and they have my support.
Good.
I told Wayne, I don't like a lot of things. You know, Wayne and I don't agree on a lot of things. But I'll tell you one thing Wayne and I agree on. I can't see why the hell that all that painting that went on our Walmart up there couldn't have been done by some outstanding West Virginia, Raleigh County, Beckley men and women that could have done just as good a job as anybody from Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, California,
Mexico,
name the state.
Mexico.
I don't give a damn.
And Guatemala, Honduras.
Know, I mean, it's local business. We've got business. There's
construction
going on over this town right now, Bob.
Yeah, they're bulldozing a Civil War battlefield in Fayetteville even as we speak, and I guarantee you would be hard pressed if you walked onto that site to find a single West Virginia worker. Fayette County, Raleigh County, hell, Harrison County, Hancock County, Jefferson County. Virginians
Bob,
there.
Bob, would you want to be a part of bulldozing that?
No.
Okay.
But that's not why they're not there. They didn't have an opportunity. They weren't invited. They weren't invited to the party.
I agree with Wayne on that. You know, I totally agree with Wayne on that. That's one thing he and I agree on. By golly, we got people here that need work, and we got the workforce that can do it.
Yeah,
Democrat, Republican, I don't give a darn whatever.
Well, consider
there's
Kyle.
Two things I am, Bob, I'm very proud of. Number one is proud to be an American, and number two, I am darn proud to be a West Virginian.
Yeah, we've got
the people who can do it.
It takes some starch to be a West Virginian, Kyle.
Right.
But, you know, you talk about these Walmarts. Consider for a minute, Kyle, you know, once these, like the one over in Fayetteville, once it's up and operating, sure, they're going to employ West Virginians there. Maybe they'll employ 200, maybe they'll employ like the 500 or whatever that work at the one on Eisenhower over here. And when they do, for every 200 people they employ, it's going to cost you and me and the rest of the taxpayers of this state $400,000 plus per year to support those people working there. because they won't pay them a high enough wage and make benefits available to them.
Exactly.
Now,
you know, I agree. Well,
I can't walk in there, Kyle. I can't. I won't. You know, there are West Virginians working there, but I'm working for those West Virginians working there. And somehow or another, I've got this crazy notion that if you're working full time, if you're putting in your 40 a week, that somehow or another you ought not have to be on welfare.
I agree with Bob. I don't disagree with anything you say at all. Bob, every once in a while, just realize that on some of these issues, some of us Bush voters and supporters, and I still strongly support my president. I'm sorry, I'm not going to back off on that until I've got a reason in my eyes to not do it. But let's not offend people that want to support what you people believe in. And Wayne, you know, I love him. The guy's great. He's a very intelligent man. He's obviously he's very well spoken. I've heard this man. I've heard him in news drops on your very news. About situations, and he represents himself. You know, I'm proud of him, and I love him. I'd like to be with him when you walk up to Walmart and say, "Hey, wait a minute, guys. Why the hell aren't you? Why aren't there some West Virginia boys out here doing this job?" I'd love to walk up with Wayne and approach him and just say, ask why. I see it every day. I drop off there every day. I see things going on, and there's construction sites all over this town. I pick up construction workers and take them to construction sites from Ohio, Iowa, Indiana, all over the country. Doing things that we got people right in this town, right here. Well, you could probably throw a rock from where I live right now and hit somebody in the head to do as good a job as any construction worker at any site that's being worked in Beckley right now.
I understand that, and you know, listen, I'm gonna be kind of neutral on this. Stand by a second, will you?
Okay.
Got a phone ringing here, and but anyway, this is something for you to do, and you said, you know, you'll do what you do until you find a reason to do otherwise. You know, when you convince yourself, you will be convinced. No one else will convince you, Kyle. But take a look at these situations. Take a look at situations where workers work full-time and can't even get out of poverty. Take a look at that situation and ask, and if you go far enough to find out why it is as it is, I don't have to change your mind. You'll change it for yourself.
Well, I heard it. Talk show over the weekend. Rusty Humphrey, the guy who was on for Dr. O'Brien last week.
Can't remember his name.
I can't either. And there was a lady called in, and you know, and she said, "Why can't all of you people?" She named conservative, liberal talk people, and you know, get together and realize what we need to do in this country is come together, not as Democrats, not as Republicans, not as liberal, as conservatives, as Americans.
I heard that conversation last week.
Washington, D.C., we need leadership. We want our country back.
That would be nice.
It's been taken away from us.
Yeah, sure it has.
It's been taken out of our hands.
But
men
you've
like
gotta,
Wayne.
You've got to ask who took it away, though, Kyle, and you've got to come to that answer by yourself, and it's a lonely road to travel.
It's not just the Democrats.
No.
Not just the Republicans. We've not had good leadership in this nation for a long, long time.
Yeah, since at least 1994.
Okay, Bob. Okay.
No, I mean, that's the leadership we're talking about. You know, we talk about pork barrel spending. It's doubled since 1994, if not tripled. And this was from people who promised they were going to be more careful with their money. It's got to be a little bit disheartening sometimes. I mean, I'm a liberal, and yet I'm the one worrying about the deficit. We got entire caucuses in Congress that think deficit? What deficit? Who cares? I mean, you've seen people on a bender. You've seen people on a binge, Kyle. We got a binge going on in the halls of Congress.
Okay, Bob. We're getting into another whole area of debate here. I don't want to get into. But to those people at our age, I love you. I support you. But you got to know there's some Republicans like myself and conservatives, and not just some, but many, including the lady
skin color is far different from mine. It's in the same profession as you that support you, but don't, and remember that, don't think we don't support you and we don't believe in you. I blew my horn at least 4, if not 5 times today when I was by there. Okay?
Okay.
In support of those people. And they all smiled and waved. They were very pleasant. They weren't being rude. They weren't being obnoxious.
No. And yet somebody has to come down and try to intimidate them. Yeah, that's just unacceptable.
Exactly.
All right, thanks, Kyle. I appreciate it.
Okay, partner.
Take care.
You have a good one.
You too. All right. Just a few minutes left. See, I couldn't get to the phone. Whoever that was calling, I would have loved to have taken your call. I apologize. Sometimes other things have to be looked into here. What I'm trying to get across here is, well, have you ever seen that old bumper sticker? Oh, wait, never mind. Let me see if I can get this. Oh, well, no good deed goes unpunished. Try again. Now, have you ever seen that bumper sticker? Think globally, act locally. The theory behind that is if you act locally, it will return in global change. Now, I don't know. I don't know if you buy into that. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. But what we are sensitive to this issue because, among other things, I bothered to talk about it. When everyone else was as quiet as the grave, you got the information here. And if people's free speech rights are being suppressed, you need to know about that if you value your own free speech rights. I don't know how I can be any more plain. And so this issue is in front of you now, and these men and women are grateful to you for your support. But it's not just them. I just shared with you the story from Lawrence Messina at the Associated Press. This is a problem at virtually every hospital you walk into in this state and in this nation. And it is a problem that is brought about by complicated factors, not the least of which is the idea that people are less valuable than the corporate bottom line. This is a messed up country when a CEO makes 301 times the amount of the average worker for his or her company. And there goes Bob. He's getting all communist on me again. How much money would it take most of the people listening, how much money would it take to make you happy? How much money would it take to get the lupine pest off the damn porch and let you take a free breath? You know what I mean by that. I'm not talking about what you're going to do someday when you win the lottery. I'm talking about whenever it is you pay your bills every month, when you sit down and you go through it and you find yourself coming up short. I'm talking about when you when you scrape together the last bit of money you've got at the end of the month and you put it in your gas tank instead of, taking your kids to a clown burger. I'm talking about the middle class. Us, the working people. How much would it take to make you happy? Because, see, I'm not going to buy into that old fraud of, well, Bob, money can't buy happiness. No, but it can buy things that help bring on happiness. How many, we hear so sickeningly much about defending marriage. My God, if you want to defend traditional marriage between one man and one woman, why don't we work on the situation in this country and fix it so one man and one woman can live together in marital harmony without fighting and squabbling and screaming and carrying on at one another, not because they don't love one another anymore, but because the financial pressures are crushing them. You understand? How much would it take to make you happy? These nurses apparently say they make good money. It's my understanding that hospital actually pays better money than most other facilities around here. It's not a money issue. We were told that time and again. It is a patient's well-being, patient safety issue. Might you call it a human rights issue? But again, if it's not a money issue, as so many are, what then? How do you help? How do you support? You support these workers. You support all workers. The best way to support a worker is to support a union. Because unions are workers, and union workers are better trained, are safer, have more secure home lives. You understand? Up until the Clinton economy of the 90s, the most vibrant economy this country ever had was during the Eisenhower years. Yes, he was a Republican, okay. Far more important than the politics therein, upwards of 30% of the labor force in America was represented by unions. And those union workers built an America that to this day is somewhat, represents somewhat of a golden age when we glance back. Support workers. Support unions. Think globally. Act locally. Thanks, everybody. Glad to have you around in whatever way in which you were. Calling, listening, emailing. I appreciate it. Makes this an awfully good job. Best one in Beckley. Maybe the best one in the country. We'll be back tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. You be here with us, I hope. The show tonight, of course, produced by the inimitable John Kepi, engineered by Randy Kerbway, announced at least in part by Brian Reznor, and brought to you as ever by the 20,000 workers of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, pay attention. They are working for you. Also brought to you by our very, very good friends at the West Virginia Pipe Trades. If you want, and I urge you to, encourage you to, drop by whiterosesociety.org. Ben Birch archives the show every night, and his efforts do not go unnoticed. Hey, Agnes.